Oh, I think we had our last cool day today before the heat of the summer.
It's a cool day.
Oh my God, are you like Ed Helms now?
Who's Ed Helms?
He's the guy from the Hangover and The Office. He always sings and stuff. Or falls and screams. Did you lose a tooth?
I have, yes, in the past.
Oh, I meant now. You fell. What happened? Your penis fell out. I'm
Yes,
sorry.
my hard drive fell over. Ladies.
Is that what you call it?
Yes, I call it my hard drive.
Just one time I'd like to come into this conversation and somebody is not making a sexual reference.
We were talking about his hard drive. That's what he calls it.
I know. I said I'd like to come in when it's not being a sexual reference.
Oh.
It wasn't being a sexual reference. Only you made it a sexual reference.
Oh. Yeah, no. Not in that voice you were using, sir. Good try.
Yeah, but you missed it. He like fell and he fell on his stuff or something. I don't know.
Yes, on my stuff.
How are you, Lee?
Good. Very tired, but good. Oh. Been a really long couple of weeks, but hey, woohoo! What's going on here? I want to talk about Iron Man and Oblivion.
All right. There's lots to talk about.
It's yes, almost as if we've been gone for 2 weeks.
Man, I know.
It's
I
weird
guess,
to be gone for 2 weeks. I kind of like it, but it's kind of weird too.
I know it is. It's like, okay, what did you see the off week that we need to remember and blah, blah, blah.
It's mixed for me because I feel like I can't get into the groove until Madonna.
Hold on a second. Scott.
Madonna starts
if
singing.
If you're trying to talk, all we heard was beep, beep, beep.
Oh, I didn't even hear that.
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Well, now you're fine.
So I'm getting caught. All right. Here, TV's gotten weird. Like, I don't understand.
Gotten weird?
Well,
yeah.
The seasons.
Oh, I don't understand seasons. There are no seasons anymore.
I know there isn't because to me, Warehouse is my summer show.
Mm-hmm.
But now it isn't.
It's kind of your spring and summer show.
No, it started in the fall. All this stuff started.
Well, but now it's back.
Well, I know, but it's spring.
Right.
I'm this.
Soon to be summer.
I know, but it's.
I agree.
Disconcerting.
It's
and
like
why
they're,
do
doing
they...
they're doing the TV like they do with fruit. You know, it's always like.
All right, Scott.
Summer.
I can't wait to hear where you go with this one.
They're rubbing
well,
it?
No, it's like, you know, how fruit, there's always seems to be fruit
it.
No matter what season.
It's a
no,
global,
not,
it's a global world is what you're saying.
It is
exactly.
Global,
it is
I
global standard summer.
And I am pissed off.
Okay. Can both of you just lower your volume in?
I'll try. Just
a bit.
I don't know how to do
okay,
these.
And things. By that she means,
all right, there's a
keep
sound.
All your thoughts
there should
to
be a sound thing where you have input in.
You think I understand these things.
Hold on a second.
You've been on the freaking podcast for what, 3 years now?
My microphone is as low as it can be. I am
but,
not joking.
But no, there should be in your computer an override. Right, John?
Okay, how does that sound?
More tech help from Ross.
Scott, you're good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
How am I now?
You're still a little high.
Silence.
Only because you're good, Scott. a person that has now liked the show, you just come in a little too high.
I thought that was serve.
No, serve's okay.
I think she means
think
loud for my high.
High,
but
I'm being nice.
You are being nice, and it's very sweet of you.
Anyway, no, they love the show. They just, you know, anyway.
Who is this one person?
No. They're comments.
Yeah, that's the problem. Me and Lee are loud people.
All right, so here's the thing. So they killed off Lena, for real.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
sad.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Spoiler
I wish we,
you know.
Don't say what show you're talking about, then it's not a spoiler.
All
it could
right.
be anybody on any show.
Right, it's a show we really like, and I. But
Duck
James
Dynasty.
James Marsters has a job.
Yes, we're always very happy when James has a job. That's always
because
nice.
Because he's always at Dragon Con.
And he's somebody cool. He's the Count Saint Germain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's going to be interesting.
I just like it when he can have his natural hair color. I always think that's
Yeah. Now, the thing is I will say this. They do get some really good people to play villains. I mean, it's almost like Doctor Who in a way of who Reese was really good.
Yeah, I also think it's very interesting that they get people. I mean, just this last one, they had Enrico Cantaloni, who's been, you know him. He's in everything. Every time you turn around, you go, oh, who's that guy? That's him. I mean,
he wears pantalones.
Yes, Cantaloni.
He must have went through hell in grade school.
Yeah. Well, he was Galaxy Quest. He was the alien commander.
Yeah.
You know, he's been in a lot of things. So when you see him, you go, oh, I know him. So, I mean, they're getting some really great people.
Oh, my God. He's like the TV version of Austin Pendleton. Look that up.
Okay.
Austin Pendleton? He's that guy. He's that nebbishy guy, kind of guy that's been – all right. Remember –
he's a Danger Mouse's
Streisand,
sidekick, right? That's Penfold. Never mind.
What's up, Doc? He was in that. He's that kind of weird nebbishy kind of guy that just shows up.
If Mark Shepard were not the little black dress of sci-fi, I would say Enrico Cantaloni.
Oh, did you see that bit where they had him as a voiceover?
They have him in
Austin Pendleton?
No. Mark Shepard. They had a bit at the end of last week's, where they had Lena's video signature or whatever they
called it. Oh, yeah, they did. Well, remember, he used to be a...
Well, I know that. That's what I'm saying, though. That it was a nice bit of continuity.
And I've got to be very honest. Warehouse is doing a great job with that, the continuity. I mean, this is the show I'm now like, I can't wait to see.
Well, not just continuity. It's having the repercussions of the stuff they've done.
Yeah, that's good.
You don't hit the reset button.
No.
Somebody said, I mean, when they brought Jinx back and somebody said, look, the next person who dies is staying dead. And the fans were all upset. It was Lena. Why can't you bring her back? And it was like, guys, guess what?
She's got a job elsewhere, kids.
Well, people have to stay dead. But, you know, I think the thing about Warehouse is it's every episode I'm kind of – it's become the fun show. And it's been a fun show. But it's been a show I can watch. We can all watch together. We all enjoy it, of course. Thanks a lot, Eddie McClintock. My child loves the, you know, what part of a woman do you understand? The booby area. He's been giggling at that for weeks. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, he's what, 13?
Yeah, of course he's.
Well, of course he's going to giggle at that.
Yeah, so is Eddie. Eddie is 13. Too.
Eddie is 13 as well. But no, I mean, so I'm just loving, and I'm just kind of pissed at Sci-Fi. I have no idea why this is on after Defiance. Defiance should be the 10 o'clock show, and this should be the 9 o'clock show.
Yeah, because there's nothing involved on this. That's kind of interesting.
And I'm like Defiance, but I mean, Defiance is a much more. It's a much more adult show. I mean, not in a bad way, but I mean, there is prostitution.
Don't they have a whorehouse there? Isn't like the sister of the mayor, like a whorehouse proprietor?
Yes, there's a whorehouse.
I think it has to do with numbers.
Well, I think they're trying to build an audience for Defiance, and they're hoping that they'll get that from the people watching while they go to Warehouse 13, which makes a lot of sense. But
it's not a 10 o'clock show.
It's not a 10 o'clock show.
Hannibal is a 10 o'clock show. I'm just saying.
Has it been canceled yet, please?
Have you been keeping up with that?
I have. And
has he eaten anybody yet?
Yeah. Oh, my God. He had a dinner party.
Oh, my God.
And guess who was guest last week?
Who?
Gillian Anderson.
Was she really?
Yeah, because she actually auditioned for the Clarice Starling for Silence of the Lambs, apparently.
Oh,
about that.
Are we talking about Hannibal?
But she didn't remember it, so.
Kim!
Yeah, this is true.
Hello.
Hi, Kim.
Aw, it's our candy-coated Princess of Darkness.
Remember, Kim? I came up with that name.
That is so adorable.
Isn't candy-coated.
I've been seeing.
Kimmy?
I've been seeing.
Kimmy? Just want to let you know, when I get that Austin Healey, I'm naming it Lola.
I think that's a brilliant plan.
Or Phil. I haven't decided yet. I might name
it Phil.
Wait,
what
you might
getting?
Have to meet it first to see which name is appropriate.
Yeah.
What are you getting?
I'm hoping that I will be able to, at least for a little while, drive in Austin Healey, and then if the finances work, I might be able to keep it.
Wow.
And
it's James Bond type of person. Wow.
It's a 67. It's older than
you. Yeah.
So
it's older than you.
Get to college, but you can
Holy crap!
I didn't
Wait
know
a minute,
they had
what?
Invented wheels before you were born.
Boutel.
Hey, Widge is here.
Yeah,
hey.
Keep it up.
Oh my God, it's not. He's not on the phone. Too.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody's allowed to be mean to John though, because John's my best friend now.
You know, I've been seeing Kim all over the place in the game I'm playing.
Hey, Kim.
Yes?
I slept with John.
Well, who has?
All of us have
you
slept
didn't,
with John.
Scott.
How do you know?
I'm
just saying, he drove to a random comic shop for me to get me an autograph I really, really wanted. So he's got a lot of points.
That's good.
Well, what autograph was this?
So I'm going to use them all tonight.
Yes.
Kelly
Pseudaconic.
What?
Keep going, Kim. Tell them who that is.
It was Kelly Pseudaconic's autograph.
And she does which comic?
She does Captain Marvel and Avengers Assemble.
Ah.
And is she the writer or
the... Is the wife of Matt Fraction?
Yes, she is actually also married to Matt Fraction, who does Hawkeye and FF and Fantastic Four.
No.
Like, the amount of creative genius coming out of that household right now.
I met her daughter, too.
It's kind of like a Jane Espeson household. I know.
Hold on.
I met her daughter and her mom, too.
Aww.
Lee, I'm looking at these cars. What year?
67.
Holy shit.
It is a family. Possibility. So if I got it, yeah.
Are you going to drive it? You should drive it in the parade, Kitley.
If they ask nicely,
no. She don't want prints on it.
This is an awesome car.
Wait a minute. Oh, yeah. What are we looking at? What's happening?
I don't know. They're all awesome cars. Kitley. Oh my God.
What was that, Lee?
A 1967 Austin Healey.
Okay. And this is significant. Why?
I might be able to drive one for a while and maybe buy it.
Oh.
Lee, why don't you just say, I will buy it? Say it with conviction.
You know, okay, so.
Kidlet, just, you know, start working
husband
at
left,
McDonald's.
Husband left the room. Screw it, man. If I can do it, this is.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a picture of it now, Lee, and I will say this. It does look very Lee-sized.
Doesn't it? And doesn't it look... Wouldn't I look just fantastic inside it?
This would be a great villain car, Lee!
The one that they made, only so many that came over to the U.S.
And...
Stayed in the U.K., then came to the U.S. So.
Now, Lee, I will say this. Are they all convertibles? Is that...
Yes.
There's one that's not.
Most of them are convertibles. I think I think it's like 10 or 20% that aren't.
Well, right.
I imagine
what color
this.
Is it, Lee?
Go ahead.
I haven't seen it yet. I think it's green.
Oh, Hunter green.
Ooh.
British racing green.
Well, yeah.
You go.
Lee, if you drive this car, I think by law, you have to wear a scarf that can billow behind you.
And big glasses.
Really,
big eyeglasses, sunglasses.
You know, Isadora Duncan met her fate with a scarf and a convertible.
I think a scarf not tied around my neck so it could easily go float away, but a scarf would be good also with the big, big glasses.
Right, around your head. That's what I was saying.
You need a scarf over your
head. Is this thing on?
Yes, that's it.
Like
over the hair, like Audrey
Hepburn. John, I heard you. Scarf
what?
Over the hair.
And the glasses.
John said the scarf over the hair a couple
I said the
of times.
Big
but
eyeglasses, sunglasses, but whatever. Okay.
Hi, Tom.
No, just go ahead. Talk right over me. I don't care. Welcome to Weekend Justice.
Talk over you.
I talk over John when, you know, we're sleeping in the same hotel room. Just saying.
That's she
not,
says words
that's not
over
the only thing you
sleep,
do over
John,
me.
John, but that's part of the ritual.
Yes.
She watches you while you sleep. She watches
she
you while
present
sleep.
While he was unconscious.
But yeah. No, I'm just present while you were unconscious. Yeah, there you go.
And then here, she said the magic
here,
word.
Drink this.
Hi, Tuffles. So are we ready to talk about Iron Man?
So I've been seeing
Herman!
I've seen it twice already.
Well, I've been trying to tell Kim that I've been seeing her all over the place.
You, what, John? What?
I'm playing Fable 3. Yes, I just got around to it. And I keep seeing your name pop up. And I keep going, I can beat that.
Oh, like on the Friends thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that on, like, I think I rented it. I didn't own it. So I had it for, like, an extended weekend, and then I took it back to the store. Do we own it now? Did you get it on Gamefly?
It's somewhere up here, I think.
I can't hear you, sweetie. You're really, really quiet.
It's somewhere up here, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I might have to go try to beat some of John's records. Although
apparently you're being fairly evil because you're killing villagers and guards.
I did not. Yeah. Well, not on purpose. Sometimes they're just dumb and run right out in front of you.
Well, she did it accidentally. Sometimes she
Are you seriously using the "it's coming right for me" defense?
Well, I do it all the time.
Actually, sometimes, you know, there would be just... very clever. Like, actually, some of the townspeople would just piss her off.
You're talking about the same villagers that you can... impress by farting at them.
You know, if they're not impressed when she farts at them, you know...
Wait, is that some kind of weird... Is that, like, the worst Mortal Kombat finishing move ever, or what?
I think so.
It's Peter Molyneux's finishing move.
Now, Scott, to be fair, those villagers, all was happening was that Kim was standing there cleaning her fingernails with her knife, and then they ran around the corner and ran smack into the knife 27 times. Now, I don't know how that's her fault.
Seriously, though, the townsfolk AI in that game is just – people will walk into you shooting people.
Yeah, they're pretty dumb.
So especially when you're using.
I had a husband in every single town.
You also had an STD.
Wow.
And, like, they never caught on to each other because they never leave the house.
Wait. How did Kim get STDs in the game?
So my wife the other day watches me playing this game.
No, I'll go back to the STD question.
And she goes,
"Totally get out of the house."
She goes, "Are you playing with anyone else?" Nope. Just walks out of the room.
See, there's no good way of answering that, because either you're playing by yourself or you're playing with somebody else, and then she starts, "Well, who are you playing with?"
You know, I think I remember that STD thing. I think I was trying to get the achievement that you get when you have an orgy.
What?
There's an achievement for orgy?
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah. Just in, like, in real life, you get...
Was there in the third game?
Orgy clothes.
I guess it was usually the second game when they introduced marriage.
It's really difficult to do, actually, because you have to make sure you have to get them all to follow you somewhere, and then you have to keep their attention long enough to get them amorous, because they just lose interest and wander off. It's very
annoying. Does it have to be a house that you actually own?
Yes, it has to be a house that you actually own.
Wow. Stop. Stop.
This AI
I have a game.
What? No, I don't know. You must have missed this, Lee. We weren't talking.
Three.
We're not talking about a game.
Yes, you are. No, because in real life,
we're talking about Dragon Con.
You get shag carpet
in a house you own.
No, it isn't. And it's usually a house that has Dragon
Con. Playing game where orgies came out for marriage.
So sorry, time out. Did Rox just say you have to shag the carpeting?
I believe said.
Oh my god!
She says shag in the carpet.
You get shag carpeting.
588-2300 Empire.
Oh, you get those commercials too.
They're everywhere. Sorry.
Now we got to pay royalties.
Who have we got? Who have we got left? Donuts and what? What have we got left to sponsors?
I like donuts.
Ooh, I got some new liqueur that I haven't tried yet.
Oh, what did you get?
It's a glazed donut liqueur.
Ooh,
and maple
that
bacon.
Just sound good.
And maple bacon liqueur.
Well, I will tell you, we found a soda pop that is chocolate covered smoked bacon.
Okay, is it Jones soda?
No, it's not. And so Kidlet tried it. If Kidlet won't drink it, that's bad. So we're actually taping this and sending it to Widge very soon.
All right. There, Jones Soda did this thing a number of years ago. They had the holiday thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's disgusting.
We did a taste test. the cranberry sauce soda was horrible. The worst one was, I think, the stuffing.
Ooh.
The stuffing soda. Oh, no, my God. Yeah. It was
pretty bad.
He actually regrets
the gravy.
That's like when you go to the World of Coke and you try to convince people that they need to drink a big swig of the bitter aperitif one.
Oh, I did that. Yeah.
The one that tastes like Aquanet?
It's the one from Italy. Yeah. Yes.
No, I don't. Okay, I know what Aquanet tastes like. Unfortunately, I've been talking when I've sprayed my hair when I was in high school. Yuck.
I was about to ask how that taste was known.
I want to know when she wasn't talking in high school.
Basically, you're trying to talk and do your hair at the same time. It
never works well.
It never works well.
So I got a question, Scott.
Yes.
So after you get done shagging some carpet, do you recommend Resolve, Carpet Fresh powder, or Febreze?
Yes.
Okay then.
Well, you just keep trying and experimenting to get the right combination that works for your carpet.
Yes.
I recommend a blue light.
Oh my God.
That's what they use on CSI.
Yes, it is. It's even on those commercials.
Also, I'm not putting a blue light near anyone's desk. That's all I'm saying.
You know, we're providing helpful tips once Martha Stewart actually gets the date, because she's going to need that.
Oh my God, yeah. So who did she pick?
I think the Hawkeye ended up my favorite thing ever.
Did she pick somebody?
I think she ended up with Chuck Woolery, but I'm not sure.
Wait,
oh,
what?
Oh, wow. All right.
On
the Today Show, Martha has not had a date in a number of years. So
unless you count the person.
Okay. Are we not counting her time in prison?
No, we're not. Mm-hmm. This is after.
Well, she's admitting after. To.
Yeah.
About to say.
Anyway, they convinced.
You know she got freaky out there.
To do an online profile with Match.com. I think that's funny. Dear. Not Harmony, but Match.com. But I guess they came down to like three contestants that, you know, first off, I'm surprised it didn't say, what is your bank account? You know, that's what she should base it on.
Is this like a reality show? Is this
no,
Match.
It was on the Today Show. No,
Stewart
no,
date.
It was all, it's all Matt
and
Lauer's.
And everyone knows that the Today Show is not reality.
It's not Flava Flav?
No.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
It'd be funny if she actually chose Ann Curry on it for a date. That'd be funny. She's bad.
And it's not Snoop Dogg Lion, whatever the hell he's calling himself now?
No.
Now that would make good television.
I thought he was
he's hanging
somebody.
Out anyway. He's seeing someone, Scott.
Don't be a homewrecker, Scott.
Yeah, Scott.
Rappers who are named after giant cats deserve love, too.
Admitted, Internet, you missed her.
Oh, we know that.
Oh, my God. So,
you know what I have?
Well,
I am really in this group.
A really, really big desk.
I have a mango passion fruit bubble tea.
Bubble tea?
It's delish.
Mm. Ooh, that looks pretty, John. Oh, dear God, John.
All right, so if we're done talking about matchmaking and orgies on games.
I thought I heard
boob. Jesus Christ.
Lee, you had mentioned Iron Man.
Iron Man! Okay, so Kim has said she saw it twice. I have only seen it once, but I have to say I really enjoyed it. I did. But it is the thing, because this weekend was Mother's Day, and we kind of go to see a sci-fi movie usually or something on Mother's Day. And I actually was like, yeah, no, I don't have to see it again. I'll see it on DVD, but I didn't feel like I did for Avengers and the first Star Trek that I desperately needed to see it again.
I have not yet reached my Iron Man saturation. I would totally go back and see it again.
So
actually, the second time we went, we were going to go see The Great Gatsby. But when I got to the movie theater, The Great Gatsby was sold out, so I went to see Iron Man instead. And I was kind of happy. Because I did want to see The Great Gatsby because I love Carrie Mulligan and she wears such pretty dresses.
Kim, just buy the Vogue magazine. Just buy that.
We're basically going to riff it anyway, so the audience is probably happier that we didn't go.
I like Baz Luhrmann movies. I like Moulin Rouge. And this is basically Moulin Rouge, right? Just in the jazz age.
And a lot longer.
But Kim, I will say this. Kim, I will say this. If you like Carey Mulligan, like wearing dresses, then you'll like this film because she does it really well.
Super. Also, like I haven't, I actually haven't read the Great Gatsby.
That is Widge's entire review.
It's what Widge isn't saying.
Because my English teacher in high school was into Flannery O'Connor. And so we read all this Southern Gothic stuff instead of reading The Great Gatsby that year.
All right, here's
so I never read it.
Lucky damn woman.
Here's the thing. Here's my question. A lot of the people, it seems like that I know, are seeing this film and never read the book. I've read the book, and I have no interest in seeing this film.
I think there are many, many people that will be seeing it that way. I mean, I think it's just like The Two Towers and all of those, in that people are like, I literally heard one person who said, no, I don't want to read the books because I don't want to be spoiled. And I honestly bit my tongue so hard it was bleeding.
Oh my God, the part where Jay-Z
I
in
think
the
you're
book.
Misusing
oh.
the word literally.
Well, I mean, I imagine there's probably, you know, people who want to see a Baz Luhrmann movie, or they liked, you know, Moulin Rouge, or they've heard that Jay-Z's in it, or they think it looks pretty. Or also with Mad Men coming up, there's probably more of an interest in 20th century costume. So there's probably some people who are liking it for that. I don't know. I just thought it looked shiny. But speaking of shiny, Iron Man.
Well, see, the other thing is, I honestly think, other than when you read The Great Gatsby, unless you're really trying to read about the 20s culture, it is a very overrated book.
Yeah. If you want to know about the 20s, just read The Jungle by Upton.
Read The Jungle. That's actually a much more realistic.
The only thing I know about The Great Gatsby is a joke about it that I read on Tumblr, which goes, ain't no party like a Gatsby party, because a Gatsby party don't stop until at least two people are dead and everyone is disillusioned with the jazz age as a whole.
That's about right.
That's pretty accurate, yeah.
So an overhyped novel about the jazz age of the 20s, that's a perfect Baz Luhrmann film.
Yeah, it could have been if they had just... The problem that I have with, as I mentioned in the review, the problem I have with Baz Luhrmann is he doesn't trust his source material to be good enough.
No.
So he wants to jack it up any direction that he can, which is why if now, Kim, you said you like Moulin Rouge. Have you seen the uncut song sequences from Moulin Rouge?
I don't think so. I have it on DVD, so
never,
I just have whatever the standard one was.
Don't do it.
Never watched them.
Okay.
Never watched them.
I liked Moulin Rouge. Okay. This is why I like Moulin Rouge. Because Ewan McGregor is pretty, and he has a nice singing voice. And Nicole Kidman is also pretty, and she has a nice singing voice, and she wore pretty corsets, and they sang Elton John in like a romantic way, and also Toulouse-Lautrec. Also, Moulin Rouge is best if you stop the DVD right after they reunite and don't let it play all the way until she dies. Because that way you have the ending.
Spoiler. Or Kim,
it came out like 5 years ago.
Kim, yes? You now win Shallow Pool Award. I'm just saying.
I never claimed otherwise.
Shallow.
Also, it's a Baz Luhrmann movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't it have Kylie Minogue playing the Green Fairy? I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, let's also say that, you know, what I said today about somebody dressing right, so I understand we all have Shallow.
That conversation that we had at work, Lee.
We've already handed out the Shallow Pool Award, and we haven't even gotten to Iron Man yet.
You know, but Iron Man. So let's go back to Iron Man. It was cool.
I love Iron Man. It was so good. I really, really liked
it. So who wrote The Great Gatsby?
Fitzgerald.
Scott Fitzgerald.
Let's talk more about that.
The book?
Let's not. Let's not.
Why don't you want to talk about Iron Man, John?
He's disillusioned with modern society as a whole.
Suppose they shouldn't have done that with the Mandarin people.
No. I'm all right with it because actually.
Spoilers.
All of this will now be
spoiled.
It's been about 2 weeks.
I'm just saying.
Fast
spoiler
forward.
Spoiler alert for Iron Man is about
thing,
to begin.
Was this the thing that Aaron was bitching about?
Yes. Fast forward 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. You hope.
Well, fast forward 15 minutes and see if I'm still going, Iron Man. And if I am, you can keep going.
So I'm okay with what Aaron was all freaked out about. And the reason why I'm okay with it.
Was it the Mandarin thing or what?
Yes.
Two things. There were two things. Because I emailed him to check and see if I was right in what they were. Yes, it was the Mandarin thing. and also the removing of the shrapnel thing.
Well, that for me is a little.
Well,
I'm a little pissed off about that.
But the shrapnel gets removed anyway, right? In the comic thing, because doesn't Extremis in the comics like absorb the arc reactor and everything and makes it part of his body or something weird like that?
Well, here's the problem with the shrapnel is that you've got what I would call the Flowers for Algernon problem, which is if you're the smartest person in the world and you realize you're going to soon become the dumbest person in the world, if you're really the smartest person in the world, you'll fucking fix your problem.
Yeah.
Right? So if you are Tony Stark, there's only so long that you can go, oh, I'm walking around with a ticking time bomb in my chest, before you have to go, all right, goddammit, you're supposed to be so fucking smart, fix your fucking problem. Which made a lot of sense to me in the context of the cinematic universe.
Because the whole reason he had to have it at first was because, you know, when it was first being written in the 60s, they didn't have like open heart surgery the way we do today, so they couldn't. But now, like, the arc reactor thing and the shrapnel thing was starting to get really belabored. Like, the more you think about it, the more it really didn't hold up.
But his t-shirts looked cool.
Yes, I would have gone, you can explain it away by saying he's got this reactor in his chest. The bigger problem is the gaping hole he has when he removes a reactor out of his chest.
Yes, because if you think about
it. Yeah, we kind of do wonder about that because they took out a part of his sternum.
All the way down in there in the first movie when she's doing it. Think about that part of your chest and what's there, like your lungs.
Well, if you use a tapered down version of Extremis, you know,
but guys.
He used Extremis so he could heal the hole.
Stop. Here's the issue. With Aaron and I, we've all had this conversation before. These movies aren't made for you guys who have read every issue of Iron Man since it came out.
And that's the reason why I'm okay with it.
Read every issue of Iron Man.
I have read two issues of Iron Man.
They are, but that's just it. But I'm just trying to lean enough to ask people about Extremis and things like that. They're made for people really like me,
but
who goes, shiny. And it's a good movie.
What I'm saying is it works on both levels. And that's why it does.
Well, here's the thing about the hole in the chest. So I want to make sure that I understand the problem here. We're talking about a universe in which we have gods, we have AI that can control multiple armor units and fight. We're talking about healing powers that let you set shit on fire. We also have the ability to make people into super soldiers, and we have radiation that can turn you into fucking monsters, and we have all of that stuff, and you're fine with it. But the problem you do have is that they can't fix a hole in one guy's chest.
You know Lee, all you have to do is take half your ass cheek.
You know,
that it was something you had to address, and that it was not just as simple a matter as taking it out. But it made sense the way they did it, because if he was having to fix Extremis in order to make sure that Pepper wasn't going to explode, then it makes sense that he would just kind of figure something out that could just, you know, regrow his sternum.
Now here's the question I have.
Easy peasy.
And release of Pepper. Do you think Tony actually got rid of Extremis in her, or, you know, notched it down in a few so just in case she needs to, like, punch something really hard, she can call it up?
I think that he did whatever they will need for him to have done to do whatever it is that they do with that character in the future.
Okay, let's have a little thought experiment for a second.
But if I want to be there because rescue.
If you're Tony and you know you're going to screw up 3 seconds after you fix her, would you give her the power to punch you through a brick wall?
Tony has to watch that.
Pepper always has the power to punch Tony through a brick wall. Metaphor.
I know. She
does
the hell out of him with her.
She can do it on her own.
Because Pepper.
Let's enjoy 12% of punching you through a brick wall.
Exactly.
12% always. No, I didn't care about the Mandarin part. I thought it was actually a wonderful little twist.
I thought the Mandarin part was fucking brilliant.
I liked it.
And I thought
it,
Ben Kingsley playing both Cheech and Chong together was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I was howling.
And I was happy with that because, I mean, as has been pointed out elsewhere online beforehand, the Mandarin character was created at a time when you could, you know, there was still the yellow menace.
Yeah. I was just going to say the Mandarin character is really yellow peril-y, and they would have had to do a lot of work.
Yes.
The theater I went to, which is around the corner from me, and I support them, they were showing the old Mandarin Iron Man cartoon, and oh my God, it was just,
It was horrible.
The R's are pronounced as L's.
Oh, yeah.
I kill you,
so,
Iron Man.
Yeah, and I also thought that it was brilliantly done on a meta level because all of the marketing, all of the ads, all the previews, and all the interviews and press they did was 100% going for the Ben Kingsley's playing the big bad. Yeah. It's the Mandarin Ra thing. And all the interviews everybody gave, like everybody carried it off so well that it was really easy to not be spoiled unless you were looking for spoilers.
Right.
And so I thought it was brilliant. Like I knew about the Mandarin from comics because I had looked him up on, you know, the internet to see what it was. And it made it even better for me because, Widge, like you often say, it's a film adaptation.
Yeah.
And you have to do what works in the genre you're working in.
Well, and
plus it's Marvel, so everything's a different universe anyway.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I was going to say. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, no, I was saying, I actually looked it up. Every cartoon version, every movie universe, all that stuff has its own universe number.
They're all, it's like all of, it's so great. This is what I love about Marvel, because no matter what, like, crack-addled idea you might have, it can be canon somewhere. Like, there's a universe where Wolverine and Hercules are boyfriends. There's a universe where Tony Stark is a woman named Natasha, and he marries Captain America. Well, she marries Captain America. You didn't know that.
It's not just that. It's like, you know, the bad 60s Fantastic Four. Has its own universe.
No, that's actually legitimately true. It's great, yeah. All the different universes.
The Sony Spider-Man stuff has its own number. I mean, it's just
and the only constant in all those universes is that Reed Richards is always a dick.
Yes. And that eventually Superboy will punch a wall. Oh, wait a minute. Never mind.
he wasn't so bad to begin with in the Ultimates, and then they fucked it up.
Ultimates ruins everything, Wedge.
Eventually. But at the beginning, some of it's good.
I was going to say, I was going to disagree with you, but then Wedge followed it up.
Yeah.
I didn't say immediately.
Yeah, the only thing that was so fucked out of the box on Ultimates was Ultimate X-Men.
I concur, sir.
Yeah, because it's like the movies. You have way too much. You have this huge buffet of characters in front of you. And you go, oh, well, we need to pick all the good ones right now. It's like, no, you don't have to do that.
Two good ones are fine. Surround them with fodder.
That's well, right. not even that. It's just like, take your time. I mean, it's like you're probably going to be right. You could run this book for as long as you wanted to, more than likely, because it's an X book. And if anything, they'll just renumber you or rename you. So just why not start with the five original characters and run from there.
Why don't start with the X-Men in Australia cast.
Nice. And you notice the name of the president in Iron Man 3?
Yeah, that was cute.
Well, they actually did that for Warren Ellis. One of the screenwriters tweeted like that. Yeah, we did that.
Oh, yeah, because I actually saw when I was watching the lame ending.
Was it lame?
Yeah.
What lame ending?
It was cute.
Post-trailer
thing.
What, the last scene after the credits?
Yeah.
The post-credits?
How could you not love that? That was
adorable.
Rose. They are
science. It was so cute. I love Mark Ruffalo so much. He's such an adorable hippie.
It's Bruce. How can you not be happy about Bruce?
He's not that kind of doctor.
That's right. And he doesn't have the temperament. John!
Yeah. Also, it's even better if you hear Like, there was an interview I read where Ruffalo was like, yeah, we were going to do something. And then Marvel said we weren't going to. And then I was talking to Robert at the Oscars. And he's like, why don't you come and shoot for a day? We'll put something together. And I was like, hey, it sounds like fun.
Well, what's weird is because that whole, if they hadn't done it, then what were they going to do with the whole arc of the story?
Yeah, I don't know.
Y'all know.
I mean, the only other obvious solution would be introduce Doc Samson or something, but.
They did introduce him, didn't they? Wasn't he the...
Oh, he was...
Wasn't he in the Hulk movie?
Yeah, he was in the Hulk movie. But I'm saying...
I mean, I have obviously forgotten most of that movie because I didn't like it.
No.
It was boring. The only part I liked was when Tony was yelling at the guy at the end.
General Ross.
Yeah.
Actually, I love the whole idea of what Iron Man 3 did to kind of subvert expectations.
Oh, that's
yes.
And like the post credits thing, you're sitting there going, okay, post credits thing, it's going to happen. And it was just a scene between two characters that doesn't actually have greater weight or significance to lead into Thor 2 or whatever. That was actually pretty cool.
I love it because it's so, like, Tony's sitting there being all grandiose and waxing poetic and that anything, and Bruce is sitting there snoring.
I love the fact that
Bruce has stayed.
Right. It shows that there were a lot of like little threads from Avengers that were still there. Like they didn't just kind of conveniently forget that all happened. Speaking of which
is good because they brought up the whole PSD.
Yes, I love.
I really like that.
Well, yeah. here's what I find amusing is that there is only one question about Iron Man 3 that bothers me.
No.
And I've not heard anyone ask it. And of all the geek questions that you could throw out, this is the one that I think is the problem. And the question is very simple. Where's S.H.I.E.L.D.?
That actually was a big, big question. Yes,
because
saying that, especially during the final part.
Well, the only mention of S.H.I.E.L.D. you get is after Jarvis has compiled the information from the databases. Right.
That was really bothering me. I did actually, and I haven't brought it up as a geek question because.
Well, here's my thought on this. Caught up in some sort of jurisdiction war.
Well, hang on, Tuffley, go ahead.
Well, here's my thought on this because once they got all the films out, they issued a timeline of when things all occurred at the same time, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible that the S.H.I.E.L.D. series is happening concurrently with Iron Man 3, or because we have, I guess, in this phase, there are two films that aren't on Earth.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay. Yeah.
So you've got two films that don't occur on Earth. So you have a lot of Earth time to play with, which I imagine is what the balance of the S.H.I.E.L.D. series will represent. But it does give you enough room to sort of stretch in and say, okay, this show takes place during this timeline. And that's why they weren't involved with Iron Man 3 because they were. And the other thing is, and the thing that I had brought up earlier, was I don't think we're done with AIM. And I think that's going to come up in the series.
I wouldn't disagree. I think also the reason I was able, while it did bother me a couple of times, which I kind of hand waved it away, is if you think that this isn't that far after Avengers, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s still getting its shit together from people being blown up and losing everybody.
Here's the other thing is that what we've seen in the movie verse for S.H.I.E.L.D. is S.H.I.E.L.D. deals with alien shit and like obvious superhuman weird shit.
I was going to point
until you get to the point with the fire breathing people, which you don't know about until the very end.
That was kind of
cool. It all just looks like a standard, you know, Homeland Security military jurisdiction terrorist thing.
Absolutely right.
Which was the point.
Absolutely right.
I can imagine after threatening to tell people that you almost tried to nuke Manhattan, they may not be on the speed dial.
Well, that was the World Security Council. It's kind of different.
Really, I thought the explanation was handled really well in the one dialogue from Rhodey. It's an America problem, not a superhero problem.
Yeah.
Which I love that they gave Rhodey such a.
And I didn't think about it.
It's so awesome.
Well, but my only thing is this. It's like they don't just deal with alien problems and whatnot, because otherwise, I mean, why would they have cared why would they have cared that Tony was dying in Iron Man 2? I mean,
the reality is, as far as they knew, as far as they cared, it was one terrorist. They've got bigger things to do.
Which is fine, but see, John, that's fine, but I would have liked a bit of dialogue where somebody, maybe it's Pepper, whoever, says, well, where are your SHIELD buddies? And Tony says, they're busy handling something bigger than this, even. Something.
Well, no, that's when he's talking to Rhodey in the bar, and he's saying, I can help you with this stuff. Let me get in on it. And Rhodey is saying, this is a military job. This isn't an Iron Man job.
Right, but I mean, that's not SHIELD. SHIELD is the, what they've done for me in the movies is they set up SHIELD as the, it's like in the Ultimate Universe, where SHIELD is sort of like the mover and shaker that makes stuff happen behind the scenes. So to me, it's like they should have at least addressed why they weren't there, or maybe they were there and we just didn't see them. You know what I mean? It's just something.
I mean, I suspect that they probably come in on cleanup once they saw the fire-breathing people were involved. But well, like, I'm with John. I felt like it was adequately addressed by the This is a terrorism military problem.
The thing is, I think there was a line when they were talking about the hunt for the Mandarin where it was where they mentioned SHIELD, FBI, CIA. So they were kind of part of it, but it wasn't. And I think, you know, I think what they did is like they didn't want to deal with it because they wanted Tony to be on his own, and they sort of like, oh yeah, SHIELD's not here.
And if you think about like the timeline too. So if SHIELD was going to get involved, maybe they would get involved in Malibu, where there's just been a giant attack, but nobody knew that Tony was in Tennessee. And then he went straight from Tennessee to Miami, like, and he wasn't in contact with anybody but Pepper. You know, so, like, I could see, like, maybe SHIELD is over in California, maybe SHIELD shows up in Florida afterward, but...
So they're basically playing catch-up.
Well, I would imagine SHIELD would have showed up in the aftermath of Miami with, detecting all of the suits.
Right.
I think that would have gotten their attention.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
I may go back to Widge's side here. Given how they, because I was trying to remember what the heck the acronym meant, because it's meant like four different things in its history.
Strategic Homeland.
So now it's a Strategic Homeland Intervention. Enforcement and Logistics Division. So,
I think it's Home World now.
According to Wikipedia, which is
in the comics, that's what they separated it. So there's Sword and Shield.
Oh dear God, really?
Yeah.
And Hammer. Yeah. Don't get Hammer.
Now the sword concept is actually a good one, Lee. I mean, I think they've used it weird, but I like the concept. But yeah, Strategic Homeland Intervention, Enforcement, and Logistics Division.
Yeah, so given the first two, three words of that, I would think that, why the heck aren't they investigating
things
that are happening on the homeland?
Well, the question there is, what do you mean by homeland? Do you mean homeland as in U.S., or do you mean homeland as in
Earth? Most certainly. How many of, with the exception of Black Widow, how many of our characters are not, quote-unquote, Americans?
Well, that's...
Thor?
Thor.
He landed in America. In America.
But
he landed in New Mexico, dude.
That's not America.
I'm really sure that not counts.
That ain't the America that I
think would have been great for another alternate scene is like, you know, Tony's like walking by and then like Nick Fury's there, and he goes, "What the fuck has been going on?" You know,
Said fuck because it's PG-13.
Yeah.
Yes, Scott.
Aren't they allowed one?
No.
Not in
PG-13.
Really?
You can say shit in PG-13.
Wow. I think you're allowed at least one fuck.
You can say shit in a PG-13. You can say one G. You can say a couple of goddams, but no fuck.
No F.
I'm pretty sure you used to be able to. Did they just update that?
I'd like to see where the rules are actually written, first of all.
Because I remember a period of time a couple years ago when they did put a fuck in a PG-13, and I was kind of shocked about it. I was really?
I'm fairly certain there are no rules.
You can have more profanity, or you can have boob.
Yeah. I want to see the equation for like how much boob equals how many swears.
The best thing to ever read for that is, and this isn't for NC, this is for R to NC-17, NC-17 to R, which is the letter that Trey Parker had to write to MPAA to get South Park. It is freaking, literally, because they actually said, you know, it's like, you said there were too many, you know, there were too many fucks and cunts, and so therefore we have removed fuck from this and that and the other, and we've put it with this, and if you just Google it, oh my god!
A similar letter for Team America.
I don't know about Team America. I know he did it for South Park, because he also ended it and said, "This is the most enjoyable memo I've ever written in my life."
Oh yeah, I remember what they did for Team America. They had the scene with the puppet sex.
Mm-hmm.
It went on far too long. That it was in the original cut of the film, and they left it in there so that they could get away with something else in the very next scene.
That's right.
So, if you cut the puppet sex, you can keep the. There you go.
Yeah.
But you know you know what's nice about the continuity that they're doing with the movies is they can put in a mention of, you know, like in the next Avengers or wherever, you know, saying, you know, you think you can handle this by yourself like last time.
Well, that's a possibility. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy Iron Man 3 because
Oh, no, I know you did. It's one of those nitpicks.
I'm saying that to everyone. And Lee, I'm with you. I hand-waved it. I went, it would have been nice if they had handled this, but you know what? I'm having way too much fucking fun.
Way too much fucking fun to nitpick that one. Because it was the same kind of thing with, there were a lot of little things that I just kept going, hand-wave, all right, I'm okay. I'm still enjoying it way too much to be pissy about this. Pepper was brighter than to follow somebody and go into their hotel and not be safe. Pepper.
I think that was her hotel.
She kept her with her, and Pepper's brighter than that. That was very upsetting. Pepper's brighter. But that's okay. But get in. Hand wave.
Good job of establishing, you know, trustworthiness, what with almost being blown up together and all. Once you've rescued somebody from being blown up by a missile, you probably tend to like trust them a little
more. Well, that's true. I did want to, there were some great lines in it though, but the old girlfriend showing up and Tony's like, tell me there's not a 13-year-old sitting out in the car. Well, no, 14.
It's 14. That was good.
That was great. I really liked a lot.
Yeah.
Well, many, many, many things. But one of the things that I loved was in the instant when the missile is hitting and he calls the armor to go around Pepper instead of around him.
Yes, that was good.
That was nice. That was nice and unexpected. I didn't expect that.
And I
you know
it.
Something else that really worked that could have been absolutely horrible was the kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you could have played that. That'd be like, oh, no, it's like Goonies or something. Not
because
that I didn't like the Goonies,
it.
But it's like, but oh, my God, I love that. I'm cold. That, I love that.
You know what, Rox? I when watching that, I went, you know what? Rox is really going to enjoy this part.
I did.
See,
that little lip that came out, too.
On that kid, he's hilarious, too.
You know, that's the real Audi commercial right there, where the kid's pouting, going, I'm cold, and he just speeds off.
Yeah. And I want a Dora the Explorer watch now, too. Like, I need a Dora the Explorer.
He speeds off. I can see the commercial. You can frame it. He says, I'm cold, and then he speeds off, and then the voiceover goes, this is why you bought an Audi.
Nice.
Oh, have you seen the Audi commercial that's like Nimoy versus
yes.
That is I haven't seen it. I haven't watched
it
yet.
So great. Find it on YouTube, Lee. It's awesome.
I know. I just haven't watched it. Oh, everybody's been like singing.
And Nimoy's in the car singing.
Okay, but hands down, I'm sorry. Leonard's hair was bad.
Yeah, that was bad hair.
That was like fucking horrible hair.
It was bad hair. But I don't care because he was singing along to Bilbo Baggins.
I know, it was great. Lee, what?
He's a little old. He might, you know...
No, but
no, Lee, this is bad hair. I've never seen...
I hope it's for...
Now, they probably played it up that way, but... Probably. If they played it up that way, awesome. But it was the worst hair you've ever seen. He could have been he could have been a hobo.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
That's
Bruno Mars.
Well, no, he was in the Bruno Mars video.
Yeah,
hang on.
Oh my god, that's
the
awesome.
Whole time lounging around in his underwear, being a dick to people. It's great.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Rox, let me get this straight. he could be a hobo and you're not okay with this?
But it's Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy's not supposed to be a hobo.
Whoa. Are we going to deny Leonard Nimoy hoboness?
Because Rock's vision of Leonard Nimoy, Rock's vision of Leonard Nimoy is walking around with a jacket and turtleneck and explaining hobos.
Exactly.
In search of the hobo jungle.
There's the hobo in habitat in the hobo jungle.
I could just see the rocks. I just see it in my head. You going, you just like, you're totally focused on that in search of.
I am.
And he borrowed Sagan's turtleneck.
Oh, I know.
I love him.
Okay, so Widge, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't know if we're over with Iron Man, but I want to go to the movie. I will never be over with Iron Man. Yes, I know. You will never ever be over Tony Stark.
Well, Lee, let me just throw out this one last thing that I really enjoyed that I did not like. I was alarmed that the trailer had the arrival of all the suits. And I went, oh man, this would have been so much better if they'd left it alone. But they like not been in the trailer. However, cause originally when they, if you had not known and they all showed up, you'd be like, who the fuck are in those suits? But the fact that he was then leaping around from suit to suit.
Yes.
That was great.
That was cool.
So anyway. One thing I thought they really did well, and they did a lot of things pretty subtly in this, especially for a superhero movie. The fact that when he has the panic attack in the bar, he runs into the armor, you know, and the point it makes about how basically he's been hiding in his basement, building himself armor after armor after armor because he can't get over the things that have happened to him. Yeah. And he's not willing to cope with it. And then the movie takes him out of the armor and forces him out of the armor. And he basically has to now build more stuff in a cave of scraps.
Well,
you know, he has this whole fantastic, you know, hardware store assault weapon.
Oh yeah, it really was a James Bond film, but with Tony Stark as James Bond, here's the thing. I mean, I know Aaron was, and I'm not dissing on Aaron because I know he's not here to defend himself, but he was saying that he seemed disappointed that he didn't spend more time in the armor. But the thing about, and I don't know, I haven't read a lot of Iron Man comics because it's just they really did him right a lot at the time when I was reading comics. But in the movies, the great thing that I think they've set up is that when Tony Stark says, I am Iron Man, he means suit or not, I'm Iron Man.
Right. Exactly.
So it's still an Iron Man movie, whether he's in the armor or not. I was cool with that.
I think it's an important distinction. And I think the filmmakers made in both the other two and this one with Shane Black that, you know, they wanted to make a distinction between this and Batman.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne is the mask and all that.
Batman is dissociated and Tony Stark is integrated, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted to make it clear.
That was heavy.
They wanted to make a clear point with that. And I think, that helps set it apart from other films.
Another thing, like there was a lot of little things too. Like I felt like Happy had more character development in like the 15 minutes of the film he was conscious than he has in the entire previous two. Yeah.
And man, that mullet.
Oh my gosh. It was so, God help like, the minute he turns around and like sweeps his fingers through his mullet, I was like, oh, Happy. Now I know why people like you as a character. That's great.
And actually, it wasn't just the mullet. It was also the bolo tie. And
yeah.
The whole Travolta outfit.
I actually thought that the way they started it with that terrible song was perfect. And then there's that whole thing where you see Jensen, you see all these characters who are important later.
Well, there was something that did bother me, which, and we haven't talked about it, was Tony's PTSD was all focused. The way it was, well, PTSD is always focused on you. But the issue is Tony seemed, there's got to be some other things, I think, that have bothered Tony. This is the first time in Avengers where somebody has died that Tony was close to. Well, Jensen and Jensen's death. You come to being Iron Man and having that kind of avenging. And then I don't think it's the death.
I think it's more of a cumulative effect.
It's the wormhole.
Yeah, I think it's the wormhole because
you think
because
it's more the wormhole than the death of.
I think it's definitely the wormhole, and I think specifically it's the wormhole and him trying to call Pepper.
Yeah. I think that was probably like the precipitating event. Like the way I took it was, okay, so if you look at the Avengers, most of them have some kind of military training. The only two who don't are Bruce, who's not actually really home much during the time that he's in combat, and Tony, who is. And so the one of them who is, has the least training in coping with this kind of trauma and has been exposed not only to combat trauma, but to literal torture.
That is true.
Tony. So that's the reason I love that they did that, because it 100% makes sense. And also it ties into the thing with the armor. Like, he's trying desperately to protect himself. Like, he doesn't want to get out of the armor.
Right.
He and wants to stay Pepper. In his bunker and put, he wants Pepper to have a suit. He wants Rhodey to have a suit. Like, everyone he loves is either a computer or he wants to put a suit of armor on them. Which I'm so glad he went back and rescued his robots. I was really, really worried about them. I love those robots.
I was too. I was not. I was like, dummy!
I was like, dummy!
I was totally like, dummy! Yeah, that was Rob.
Kim, that's a great observation. I had not thought of that, that everybody else is pretty much, they're soldiers.
Right. So, particularly because Hawkeye in this one is a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Yes. But it goes back to what he said in the Avengers. We are not soldiers. Mm-hmm. You know? And he's actually the only one, apart from Bruce, who that makes sense to say about, because everyone else is a soldier. So that's a really great point. But yeah, I thought it was the wormhole as well. I thought it was just that moment of going, okay, I'm going to die in airless space on the other side of the universe, away from everything I've known. What the fuck?
And Pepper won't answer the phone.
Yeah. So, but anyway.
Like, of all the times to call screen, Pepper.
I'm not trying to sell you aluminum siding.
Oh, Pepper. I love Pepper.
Yeah.
Pepper made me not hate Gwyneth Paltrow anymore.
Pepper is the only thing that, yeah, but then all of a sudden then Gwyneth does something and I'm like, oh God.
See, I can just kind of shake my head and be, oh, look at you.
No.
What?
She says really dumb things now.
She does, but it's kind of endearing.
Really dumb
things. She's so ridiculously sheltered.
No, hang on. Hang on. Shakespeare in Love. Come on. That's a great movie.
I didn't say her as an actress. I said her personality.
All right, just checking.
No. I have nothing against her as an actress, but I was always kind of, I mean, like with her lifestyle magazine that assumes that he's a billionaire and her association with Coldplay and but it's okay because now she
it's a little more than an association, Kim.
Association.
Wait. Are you saying the whole band?
No.
Wow.
Well, technically, I guess if you're going
the reputation of Pepper's.
If you're going on the opinion that Chris Martin is the entire band, then okay.
Wow.
Woo. Who wants some epaulettes?
So anyway.
So Oblivion.
Yeah.
Well, I actually was going to, since we're in the Marvel universe, I was going to throw it open. Do you guys want to squee for 7 seconds over the.
Yes.
Like,
Ow.
I'm so excited. We can't stand it.
Okay. So let me just ask, of the people on this call who have not completely lost their minds.
Kimmy.
This moment.
So, John.
John, what are your thoughts about the S.H.I.E.L.D. trailer?
I haven't watched it yet. I'll watch it live right now.
Oh, God. Tuffley, what are your thoughts about the S.H.I.E.L.D. trailer?
If J. August Richards is who I think it is, I'm very happy with that.
Who do you think?
Who, what?
The guy from Angel. J. August Richards.
No, I know. Yes, J. August Richards.
Who do you play?
Well, there was. I've been looking around, and I have no. I can't confirm. I don't think it's. I don't think it's Luke Cage, but.
Oh God!
Wow!
It's right now. You guys have to understand. Kimmy and I are so excited about this TV show.
That would be amazing.
It is. We literally saw each other. And like squeed the other day when we saw each other because we're like, did you see Veronica? Yeah, it was really, only dolphins could hear us at that point.
I freaking watched Once Upon a Time so that I could see that. Well, I left it on in the other room, and then whenever I heard it was going to commercial, I would stick my head in to see if it was time yet.
Well, I DVR'd it, so then I had to like fast forward to find it. Yeah.
I did want to mention real quick, I am surprised because the schedules did come out today for ABC, and they put it on Tuesdays.
Yay!
Of which, hold on, ABC is also rolling out live streaming on portable devices this week.
Yeah, but you're still going to have cable.
Well, I know, but you know.
I was so worried that they were going to put it up against the only other show I watch.
Yeah, she was really, for weeks when we knew the show was a go, she was so worried that it was going to go up against Person of Interest.
Because you kept being, oh, they're going to put it on Thursday at 9 o'clock. I'm like,
because I was convinced they were going to put it on Thursdays at 9 o'clock.
I have not looked at the schedule. Is it Tuesday at 8?
Tuesday at 8.
Yes! Even better. Family show.
Is it Tuesday at 8, Hark Marmon?
NCIS.
That's okay.
That's why there are CDRs, Scott.
Oh, shit.
What?
That's a bad idea. ABC, it's not going to go. It's not going to.
Tuesday, that's a bad idea. Tuesday night at 8 o'clock is also Weekend Justice recording time.
Not anymore. It's not.
Well, the Squeak Brigade is going to be gone for its whole season.
We'll be back at 9. We'll be on at 9.
Yeah, we'll just be late. I'm excited.
You're going to be coming to my house to watch it together.
Probably, yes.
That is a really, I did not realize that I didn't hit that. Thank you, Tuffley, because that's a really dumb idea, ABC. You should not put it up against NCIS.
Does anybody even watch NCIS anymore?
NCIS is the number one.
It is a totally different audience. Here's the thing.
Watches
NCIS. NCIS is an old person.
NCIS is watched by old people.
Here's the thing. I think they'll be able to coexist. I don't think. I think Shield's going to take less of NCIS's audience than you think. The competition at that hour, besides NCIS and Shield, is what the American Idol results show, the X Factor results show on Fox, and I think they're still going with Community and Parks and Recreation and some other new show, because it's not Community yet, because they're holding Community.
No, but Community got a week.
Community got another season, which is I thought was interesting. Well, I think, and that, to me, that sort of sounded like the you can't have this Netflix. I think networks are, and that's the other thing I was going to bring up. I think some shows that I think they kept are kind of in fear of Netflix or Amazon taking them.
Huh.
Or A&E or something else, do you think, maybe?
No, specifically Amazon and Netflix, because they're both in the market for original content.
Yeah.
And if you drop a show with any sort of sizable audience, they're going to pounce on it.
That's true.
Interesting.
Yeah, but Tuffley steals your wife every Tuesday night from 8 to 9.
Okay, I have sat through the hockey playoffs, and I have to listen to him. Okay, sorry. I choose with love to listen to him every time Winnipeg has another game. Explain to me in great detail how the point results of that game affects their chances for the playoffs.
Oh,
and
it's
I do this with love because I support him.
Kim, I understand that.
So he can put up with me squeezing over Shield.
And on that note, I would like to congratulate the New York Rangers for taking the Caps out of the playoffs.
Oh, Capitals, honey?
They did beat the Evil Alouettes.
I'm so happy for you. I know you hate them.
Look, we need the Cup needs to go home. Lord Stanley's Cup needs to go home.
It's a half. I'm sorry. Hold on. It's a half a cup. It doesn't count this year.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to invoke this.
Which? Do you know what they're talking about?
I have no fucking clue.
I can actually say more than you would think.
And Lee, my sympathies about the Leafs. Taken out.
They just were not. This was not their season, half season, whatever the fuck. Yeah.
One thing I know about hockey.
All
the people at the NHL level want to marry Sidney Crosby. Like, I'm pretty sure that when they have papers and stuff on the desk, they're doodling Mr. and Mr. Sidney Crosby and drawing hearts around it.
I believe this is probably the first and only time Sidney Crosby's ever going to get a shout out on this podcast.
Who?
Exactly.
As will this probably really only cute, be the Scott. Only time Winnipeg will ever get a shout out on this podcast.
No. They've been mentioned before.
Is that Kathy Lee's cousin? Never mind.
No. No,
he's a hockey player. Apparently, he's the best hockey player ever in the history of ever.
Oh, no, he's not. No. That was Gordie Howe.
And he's
in
really
recent history, anyway.
Blasphemer.
I would go with Lee on Gordie Howe, yeah.
I'm just interpreting based on the amount of time that the hockey press...
Gretzky before he went to LA. Or Gretzky.
Is he coming back?
He keeps getting injured and not being able to play for long periods of time, and it makes him a sad panda.
Lee, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Ottawa is the only Canadian team left standing in the playoffs.
True. Oh, I didn't tell you guys how much my husband loves me. He made me bread pudding for Mother's Day.
I saw that.
Well done. Well played.
With whiskey sauce.
Well played.
Well played.
That whiskey sauce is some good shit.
That whiskey sauce is some good shit. And I'm going to Seattle next week, but I'm not going to be able to get to Portland, so I can't get donuts.
Oh, my.
You're going to Seattle. How long are you going to be in Seattle?
Only like 2 days.
You going to check in on Simon while you're there?
I'm going to let him know I'm going to be there, so I hope so, yeah. And I can't remember, is JJ there or Portland?
Portland.
Just look at JJ and then you can answer that question.
That's not. Why would you say that?
I say that with all the affection in the world.
So,
I would love
so
to.
So you're saying he said brunch. Is that what you're saying?
People are from there, Lee, that Portlandia is actually a documentary.
It pretty. I have been to Portland, and I will tell you that Portlandia is pretty much a documentary.
I think several people have asked JJ over the years since it's been on, and yeah, he says it's pretty accurate.
It's a pretty weird
but
little.
He's not, but no, here. He works for. He does. He has a job, so he's not a dirty hippie.
It has nothing to do with that, but he just looks like a guy from Portland.
What?
He just looks like a guy from Portland. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there you go.
The funny thing is the Shield show now has, have y'all seen the Shield blog, like website? It's really fun. It's like a mock conspiracy theorist thing. It's really funny, but they have a Tumblr, like they have official Tumblr, and apparently they paid for ad space on Tumblr, which anybody at that show who has ever looked at Tumblr ever should have known that all they had to do was exist, because they put a 7-second preview for the preview that aired Sunday night that went up on like Saturday. And within like 3 hours, there was already extensive frame by frame animated GIF analysis of that preview on Tumblr.
And by the way, in case anybody wants to know the Shield website, it's shieldops.com.
So totally
by Acura and the Avengers.
So I take it Lola's a flying car.
I don't give a shit what Lola is. She's pretty.
She is Shield. It has to be a flying car.
It's got
to
be a flying car. Toughly. So yes. You had said you'd mentioned the actor, but you didn't quite say if you were happy, you know, looking forward to the show, scared. What is your opinion of Shield?
It looks okay, but. Again, we've only seen in total, 2 minutes of footage from this show? So
2 minutes and 45 seconds.
Thank you. But we've only seen 2 minutes of the show, it looks like a show. It looks interesting. It looks like you have, I think it's easier because you have the familiar elements. It looks good. I mean, I don't really know anything else, you know, I don't really know anything else really substantive about it. But from the teaser, it generated the excitement it needed to.
My only concern is that on one hand, I mean, if it looks like I said on Twitter, they're doing Misfits of Science meets CSI meets X-Files.
Yeah.
And if it's done now, but if it's done correctly, that would be cool. But if it's not, then it would just be those things sort of hanging out on their own.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, let me say,
here's the thing.
Toughly first.
And just from my end, I want Shield to work.
Yes.
Because if Shield works, then you get, you know, the Jessica Jones show, or you get Heroes for Hire.
Which,
by the way, I think Heroes for Hire, and I said this online, Heroes for Hire, I would think, should be the next TV show, because that would be the next logical step in all this.
I'd watch it.
I would agree.
The viral, I gave the wrong URL.
I okay. Have yeah, stop giving them porn sites, Lee.
We, no, it wasn't a porn site. It was actually to the Avengers Shield, but this is wearetherisingtide.com. And there is footage from the Stark Expo attacks, which, of course, because I watch way too many sci-fi originals, I saw as footage from the Shark Expo attacks, and I was really, really excited about that, because I was like, they are doing everything for me. So I'm just, yeah. Kim, dress is right. Just letting you know.
I realized that you told me this today. I hadn't really looked that closely.
Yes, you had.
By the way, before a frame of this show actually airs, we've got like four months of this, guys.
Oh, Jesus.
You thought you could live with the obligatory Doctor Who segment. Now you get this.
How was Cora howling?
Luckily, Scott, I'm wearing very, very tightly packed headphones, so.
Oh, good.
It's only my ears that are bleeding.
Kimmy, what'd you say?
I said it would be great if Coulson could have some sort of shirt tearing mishap.
That would be awesome.
Oh, good God.
Or pants tearing.
You hear that, ABC?
ABC, we have a demographic for you. We're just letting you know.
I have congratulations to give.
Scott, whoa. Who was talking that Scott was treading on?
Me.
What were you saying, Lee?
I was just saying I just want to let ABC knows that there is a demographic here for Coulson losing clothes, and that would be women age 30 to like 110. Just letting you know, ABC, if this happens, we'll be there.
30. I've got friends in their low 20s who are equally as excited. He's pretty universal.
By the way, as a note, ABC, we're not talking about the same demographic who likes to see Captain Hook in eyeliner.
Okay, that was pretty funny.
That was kind of funny.
Apparently, Captain Hook is now a member of My Chemical Romance.
Once Upon a Time. I saw that a little bit on Once Upon a Time.
I was like, that's Captain Hook?
Ah. Really?
Okay.
Anyway, so Scott,
also
you were saying
merchandising.
I peeked in the room and I'm like, when did Smee become a roadie?
I think he always was a roadie.
Okay, I'm drawing the line at Agent Coulson blow up dolls. Okay.
I didn't say that. I would never be so disrespectful.
Okay, thanks, Widge.
I have some congratulations to give out.
Hot damn, Widge. That's an... Oh, shit.
No, shut up.
Wait a minute. Now, did Captain Hook... Was Captain Hook with the medicine show or not? No, I'm sorry. That's Dr. Hook. I'm sorry.
That's Dr. Hook.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Friend of the show, Chuck Metcalf, and his lovely fiance eloped a couple weeks ago. So they are now happily married.
Yay.
I thought I'd make a little shout out, and especially to change the subject from God knows what they're sick.
It was just squeeing.
Nope. Oh, Christ.
God. Stop that.
It's a good thing
Then Much Ado About Nothing is coming out in June. That looks so good.
Yeah, that looks like it could be good.
Yes, it does.
I really can't wait. Also, I love Amy Acker a lot. So she's had some good work lately. She was fantastic person of interest.
So here's a question. What are you guys' reaction to the whole Merida 2.0 Brave thing.
Oh my god.
Can we just talk about this again? Because this is going to be very ugly.
There's not enough boobs.
Disney sideways.
The boobs need to be bigger.
Okay. The conflict of the movie was that
she
did not want to have her bow and arrow taken away. And she didn't want to, like, throw herself into a corset and a sparkly dress. So what do? They take away her bow and arrow, put her in a corset and a sparkly dress.
Well, no. Also, not only do they do that, they tame her hair, they nip in her waist, they give her big boobs, they shave the cleavage, they change her dress.
They make her look
supposedly also a tiara with it.
Yeah. But I have heard that, considering there is so much outrage, that they have taken the image off the Disney
website.
So they are hopefully rethinking what they have done.
Kim.
Oh, yeah, but
Kim,
when they ripped off Joy Division, they all they did was take the picture off the website. So, you know.
Kim.
Well,
yes?
Kim, the only reason why they've taken away her bow is because she was competing with Kate Bishop. That's the only reason why.
You're going to have
wow.
to.
Actually, wow. the thing I didn't like about the rendition.
I wasn't going to go there, John, because I live here, and you can.
Kate Good and time. Merida would be friends.
Was that weird eye thing that they were doing? I mean, they gave her like anime eyes.
Well, they totally gave her anime eyes,
and they looked very docile. It's
yes.
like, really, people?
Just
you
like
not
how
know
I like
your
my
own
women.
Product and stuff. So,
it's like Brave 2, meek.
Yes.
It was very, and it very much went against so much of the character. What they were putting in, supposedly going to put in with the Princess Merida was just so upsetting. Too. I mean, yeah, they were going to be putting in the brothers with it and the plate of cookies. And I mean, you know.
But she's, the thing is, just
discussed, and it's very upsetting.
You can't even call her a princess.
She was actually a princess,
yeah.
but her stuff was focused on things like diplomacy and, you know, right. getting along with her family and doing actual ruley type things, not being ornamental.
Well, here's the thing. Were we outraged when they kind of dumbed down Belle? Not
yes.
really. Were you?
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's like, oh yeah, Belle. Belle was the smart, I mean, if you have heard about a princess, rocks.
But I'm not really aware of what
rocks.
They did.
Yes.
The internet was young then.
So. I know.
Well, it was a different
if
level
you didn't
of outrage,
have, like, kids.
You only heard about it on BBSs.
I know.
No,
yeah.
No. You also, as somebody who owns BB, a couple of different types of copies, that the issue with Belle was also that you saw it in the movies they went direct to video on. It was a totally different Belle. And it was very, I mean, a lot of parents actually were upset because there was talk about this. Now, it was different because it was in parenting magazines and other things of that nature. But yeah, people weren't thrilled with this kind of really stupid Belle.
I know. But then to move forward, there was a little bit of noise when Mulan came out. It's like, oh, what do we got to do with her? Now, here's a woman that. Okay, yeah, Merida did the whole, you know, save her mom and all that. But here's a woman that fought in a war.
Yep, and did it to save her dad.
Exactly.
I would agree.
Yeah, I think Mulan happened in the time in which I was not, watching cartoons. Like, it was in that window of time in sort of your late teens when you think you're too old to go to see cartoon movies and before you realize that no, nobody's ever too old to go see the cartoon movies.
Okay. I
kind of missed Mulan, but did they give her any weapons or anything in her thing, or did they have to give her a pretty, pretty princess dress?
Oh, no,
I believe
no.
she had a sword.
She had a sword. She had
well,
her
the original one had a
right.
sword.
She
the problem
her-
is if you go to the Disney store now, the you problem can't. Is what you get with Mulan is you get this cute pink kimono thing.
Where she had her father's armor.
Yeah, she had her father's armor, her father's sword. And yes, she did marry. Well, yeah, I don't think he was. Was he the prince? I can't ever. I believe he was.
No, he was a general.
He was the general or whatever he was. But she does supposedly at least kind of get with him. And it was fine because she did have a little bit of a. It was
and
actually
you're not
a much.
Get any Disney characters living
movie.
In sin.
Than some others. It was a much more textured movie. I mean, Mulan was really, yeah. When Mulan came out, it was pretty cool too.
I just missed
that one. I never saw it.
Oh,
there was a whole period of time between like, I think between Beauty and the Beast and when the Pixar movies started coming out, I really didn't see any of them.
My only problem, my main problem with Mulan is you just didn't have a very memorable villain.
No, you didn't. That would be true.
Because, I mean, what was his name?
Big Mongolian guy.
Egg Foo Young.
Racist.
Oh, Scott, really?
They named the dragon Mushu.
Yeah, I did have a problem with that.
So, yeah.
And that was also the period where it was around Eddie Murphy was in a damn commercial, in a damn cartoon, which I kind of got tired of.
Well, I got tired of that very quickly.
Well, hopefully it enabled him to get a breather where he can come back and actually be funny.
You keep hoping for that day.
They didn't pick up the Beverly Hills Cop show, so maybe there's still hope.
Yeah.
I heard they were talking about another movie.
No, they actually were. They actually had shot a pilot with Eddie Murphy and some guy playing his kid.
Oh, thank
God. Is that like the Die Hard movie with supposedly his kid?
Supposedly, yeah. I don't know if that was exactly the idea, but they shot a pilot with some guy playing Axel Foley's kid.
Hmm. You know what was a good movie? The Fifth Element. I really liked that movie.
I love that film.
Multipass.
You know what was an okay movie?
What?
Casablanca.
Oh. Dying of Fire. But you know what? Barbed Wire was awesome.
It wasn't bad.
I would actually like to talk about a movie that I thought was much better than our resident moviegoer, which is Oblivion.
All right. State your case.
I don't know that I really have a case other than you said there were a lot of questions that weren't answered. And I just kind of felt that many of the questions were answered. Maybe not in a way we liked.
Okay, let me get this straight. Here's question number one.
Got you.
If you are a resistance group and you have been surviving on the planet Earth for a very long time, if you know that there are killer fucking drones flying around that have fucking Gatling guns on them, are you going to A, not have a scout posted so you can be surprised when they suddenly fly up to your front door and start killing people, or B, at least put somebody out front to go, guys, somebody's coming.
No. I would agree that they were not the brightest nor the most tactical.
If you were a military resistance group who had been surviving on the planet Earth for a long time, would you, if you had giant fucking killer drones flying around with Gatling guns on them, that you spend your entire day and night running from, would you walk outside of your stronghold and then be surprised when drones turn the corner and start opening fire on you? Yes or no?
That happens in my neighborhood all the time. Yes, and Rox, I am never surprised.
No, I know you're not, Rox.
So
I would say, though... Yeah, sorry. Definitely go first.
Hang on. Whoa, time out. Toughly go.
Yeah, can I ask a question? Is this the is Oblivion and the Will Smith movie tied together? Because that would explain how the animals have been on Earth.
Oh my gosh, that thing. Oh.
That would explain how the animals that have been on Earth for thousands of years know that humans kill them. That would be
okay. Humans haven't been on Earth for 1,000 years, so all the animals have evolved to eat humans. Because that makes sense.
I don't know. Well,
so back to Oblivion. I'm sorry.
Back to Oblivion. So Lee, here's my other question. You have, you've been given the task of watching the things that mine the seawater to create the fuel that is going to save the human race. Without these machines, if they go down, the human race is completely fucked.
Yep.
Right?
Gotcha.
You are going to, how many people are you going to put on that detail? And if you had only two people on that detail, would you be like, you know what? I wonder why there's only two people on this detail.
Okay. I actually think they kind of explain that. I really do.
Okay.
Oh, now, I'd love to hear this.
Please explain it to me then.
Okay. I think they did. First of all, they weren't the only two there, as we know.
As we know, but they did not know.
They do not know. Right. I also believe that they are so programmed in what they think and are allowed to think that it is not something that they can actually question. They actually really believe these three that they're protecting, because there were three we saw, that those are the three they were protecting. Those were it. That was what they were doing. I really do believe that. I also don't, I am not sure I believe the voiceover. talking about the nuclear war and things like that. I'm not sure that the buildings all got buried because of the nuclear war. I think the buildings all got buried by the Tet.
Well, I would agree.
When
because
air force came in, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense.
Well, and my thing is this. If they were that programmed to not question what any yep. fucking human being would question and what I was questioning 2 minutes into the fucking film, then they wouldn't have had the room in the programming to go build a lovely lakeside cabin and, you know, put up a basketball
court.
That's because
he is remembering what he was. He's special. That's the thing. See, now, if there is one thing I dislike about this movie, in all honesty, it is.
He's the one.
Hold on.
I knew it. Declan was a replicant.
Well, yeah. The issue there is it is very much, I could not get away from the fact that it is a Tom Cruise movie. And I almost wish it had been anybody else in it, because I think a lot of people would have enjoyed it more. Number one is there was the issue of course he has to have a plane. Of course he has to have a bike. You know, of course he has to be artfully mussed when he gets dirty.
Oh, and by the way, Lee.
Okay. I have some suggestions for who it could have been instead.
No, hang on. Lee, here's another question. Pop quiz.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
You are on a planet that is populated by people who... You know, what was it they called them? Scavs or something? What was it they called?
Skags or something, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, aliens who that will steal technology. Okay. In fact, Rox, I'll ask you this.
What?
You find yourself on a planet that is populated by aliens that like to steal your shit. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You are good. And if Brian you Setzer. Drive up, if you drive up, on a technologically awesome looking bike, are you going to leave that bike unguarded or be surprised when you get back and it's gone?
Here's a thing. As a cyclist, there is a thing where people who buy technologically advanced bicycles and they have them in the city, they go to cosmetic chop shops, if you will, to distress your vehicle so nobody will fuck with it. So you make it look like it's been trashed for years. It looks like some homeless guy has been, you know, using it as a back scratcher. And nobody will fuck with your bike. So this guy is an idiot.
Wasn't this a skit on Saturday Night Live?
Well, I will admit, Widge, that was not right.
No, you do not do that.
Wait, isn't this a plot line from
Adventures
of
There is something, if you remember in, what is it, Buckaroo Banzai, in that film, those spaceships were like dump trucks. You know, nobody's going to steal those things. They look like junk keeps. Those are the best things to do. Those are the best things that you could fly with, because nobody will fuck with it. Because A, if you touch it, it might fall apart. I'm just saying.
Well, Lee,
By the way, what stage of fallout was this?
But I will also say though, which I think some of the questions that it seemed like you had about, I honestly, some of it bothered me, especially the why in the world has it taken them this long to figure out some things and all of that. But there were things, I mean, I think part of what bothered me more was how it was there is the one who's going to save them all. And oh, by the way, he's cloned. So there's more than one, but they're all wonderful now that they've found this woman and they have all of these memories. And so I found that very upsetting. And well, that was upsetting. And I will say flight recorders, after you separate flight recorder A from flight recorder B, usually A does not continue to get the messages from B after a ship would separate like that. That bothered me more than anything else in the whole fucking movie.
Well, but Lee, my other problem is by the time you get to the end, it just got more and more ludicrous. So let me get this straight. Wait, hang on. You look at this straight. You have the power to be a weird disembodied presence and have an upside down pyramid that flies through space. And yet you need Tom Cruise to conquer the Earth for you. What?
Uh-huh.
It's war. I'm not fucking kidding.
Thank you, Neil.
Are we talking about Scientology now?
You know what, Scott? There's something to that. I don't know what it is, and I don't want to touch it. Why is it always cocked with you?
Oh my god, was this the unofficial sequel to Battlefield Earth?
Oh god.
I have a question. No, why are we talking about this?
There's a lot of little Scientology things in it.
Go ahead, Rox.
Why are we talking about this one?
Because it's not blame me. I just said that I found it a little more enjoyable than Widge was, and I wanted to ask what some of the questions that he didn't put in there were. That was all. I swear I'm done. Ding.
But that was my main thing, is that the entire premise actually made no sense to me.
Okay.
So. Oh my God. Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I just go. Yeah, thank you. It's not refreshing. It's more infuriating because I just think about it. So, especially after seeing G.I. Joe, it's like, really, guys, if you're going to be any sort of resistance or terrorist group or whatever else, post a fucking sentry. Just post a fucking sentry.
You had to see the first movie too. Those people deserve to die.
You kind of keep hoping they're all going to die.
The for G.I. Joe, I mean, you had to watch the first movie, so didn't they deserve to die for the pain they caused you?
No. I'm talking about that there was this like terrorist group that they like burst in on, and I'm like, so you're a terrorist group, you're in a building that apparently has no windows whatsoever, and you're going to let people in fucking helicopters, which I'm sorry, they're not really stealth helicopters. I can fucking hear them. Therefore, not stealth.
Oh, shit.
They're going to land on the fucking roof. They're going to land on the you're going to allow. And you know that you're running around with nuclear weapons and you're like going, okay, oh, well, who could be chasing us? We're completely safe here. What the fuck, people? That's stupid.
Okay, video game logic is not real logic.
No, but when 13-year-olds who have played video games can run a better military job than you can, then go the fuck home. What was that?
Yes.
Kim?
That was my thing.
Did your thing make bongs?
I think she is summoning the Mandarin.
You're in the house with her. You want to tell us what she's doing?
I think her mic rig just something happened to it.
I had pushed it back because I was eating a donut and I didn't want to be smacking my donut eating sounds in everybody's ear. And then I pulled it back over to say something and the springs made a noise.
Oh,
I'm eating a donut. I don't care.
Drunk Aaron visits.
Every
fun.
Time I hear that, I think he's going to call me.
All right, so do we talk dry, Doctor Who?
Go for it.
You want to wait for Rob? Okay.
I don't know, I don't know. He should be here.
I got to go to bed.
All right.
Okay, well, we can back up and talk about Crimson Horror.
We can talk about Person of Interest.
Who?
No, Kim.
So good, no. Guys. It's
no,
so
Kim. Good. Kim. Hold on. You already had one squee moment that lasted.
I think we've had our squee moment for the
podcast. Save some of that squee for Tuffley.
How do you know she doesn't?
They don't.
Aw, they're so cute.
So, okay, Doctor Who? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah. Okay. I hated it.
I didn't like it at all.
Are we talking about Crimson Horror or are we talking about the one from this week?
This week. Crimson Horror. Yeah, we can talk about that one. That one was good. Because it was Diana Rigg. Yeah, hands down.
Diana
Rigg.
She wins.
These are the wrong hands.
I know, but however, the problem I had though with Crimson, that one, is it didn't have the creep factor that the Talons of Wang Chiang had.
You know, I don't think it was supposed to. I think it was supposed to be. I think it was just intended to be one of those, you know, nothing really makes sense episodes. It's just supposed to be really, really fun.
But it had Jenny and
Bastion. But it wasn't really, really fun.
And we've got Rob.
I love them so much. I love them more than I love the Doctor and the Companion. Like, they're my favorite.
They are good.
Of
course. You have failed in your mission.
Yes. And Thomas.
Yes.
Thomas.
I made that worse. You have failed in your mission into a ringtone.
I know. See, the only thing about the Crimson Horror, and I think we kind of said this is already that, you know, if I could have something with the Silurian detective and her wife and the little whatever he is. Thank you. I'd be ecstatic. That'd
You're
be fine.
So great.
I'm telling you.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
Doctor Who Action Hour, that and Liz Tannen, I'm set.
Oh, I know.
Okay. Funny true story. So we were watching this episode, and I said to Tuffley something along the lines of, huh, there are a lot of women getting to do cool things in this episode. I wonder if Stephen Moffat took a class or something. This is so out of character for him. And then the very next commercial break, there was a little behind the scenes thing where he was like, well, I didn't really have time to write this, so I got Gaddis to write it.
Huzzah.
There you go.
Women have too much agency in this episode for Stephen Moffat to have written it.
Isn't that really damn sad, though?
It really is.
That's really damn sad.
It really is.
I wasn't thrilled with this Cyberman episode, I actually, little tiny bit, liked Clara a little more.
No, I have been liking Clara.
I do too.
I like Clara when she can be bossy.
Yeah.
I thought her being bossy was really well. I mean, yeah. She got into that and that was good.
Do you know who Clara reminds me of when she, at her best moments? All right. You guys know Discworld, right?
Yes.
Susan.
Yes. Yes.
She's like Miss Susan.
She is. Yes. Yes. Very much.
And I love Miss Susan.
Oh my God. Yes. Because she was a governess anyway. Yes, yeah, holy shit. Isn't there a scene where she does pick up a poker? I don't know.
Yeah. And she very much has that sort of feeling to me.
Yeah.
Which makes me like her. But,
She's the granddaughter of death, and here is a girl that keeps coming back.
Exactly. Like, I don't know if those are deliberate parallels, but I like them, and that makes me like Clara.
Yeah.
Because the interesting thing, so I have talked at some length about how it frustrates me that Stephen Moffat apparently can think of nothing to write about for women other than motherhood. Not that that's not a part of the experience of being a woman, but not for every woman and not all the time.
Right.
You know, so it's frustrating that seems to be the only thing he can come up with for, you know, River, you know, and Donna and, you know, Amy, good Lord, all the stuff about Amy. But even though Clara is also a character who is written as a carer of children, it works a lot better with her because A, it is something that she is shown as choosing actively for herself because it's something that she wants to do versus it being sort of the default fate. And it's also something that she does actively and that is not an end of itself. Like, you know, she has rapport with the little girl in, I forget the name of the episode, like her first or second one. You know the one where she goes and there's the memory thing and the singing and whatever.
Oh,
but she has
the
little girl, but rings. That is something that enables them to do things and be active and move the plot forward. And she's teaching the girl to, you know, stand up for herself and be active. And then, you know, when she goes in the most recent episode where she's able to take control and all this stuff. So it's actually working better for me. And it's just, I just think it's sad that for all the time they wrote Amy, they could never do that for her. But I think a lot of it is because Amy was never envisioned as a character. She was envisioned as a plot device, and that's all they ever let her be.
Wow. So, Kim, let me ask you, what was your opinion of Amy in the first season?
I think that... Amy was really inconsistently written in the first season.
Yeah.
It was like he liked to do things that he thought that would be funny. Like it felt to me like he was trying to write coupling on the TARDIS. And a lot of times it really didn't work for me. Like she would have these moments of being great, but they wouldn't stick. Like at the beginning of every episode, she was right back to where she was the first time. And also it was frustrating because Amelia, when she was little, was a fantastic character. And it's like she lost it all when she grew up. And I mean, my theory that I have come to is that Stephen Moffat said, wouldn't it be cool if there was somebody who was conceived on the TARDIS and that gave her powers? And kind of worked backward from there. And so the purpose of Amy and Rory was their ultimate goal was always to conceive a baby on the TARDIS. And that was what they were there for. So it's like they didn't have, like, they didn't react like real people would react to a lot of things. It was weird. Like,
well, no, I do agree about that. The whole, oh, well, your baby's gone and you're never right. going to see her until she turns into Alex Kingston.
I mean, but that's okay, right? Because you know it all ends up well in the end.
Well, that's what I was saying, is because I actually really liked Amy for the first season. But then that's why I was asking about the first season, because it was only in the second season when I thought the whole thing started sliding into oblivion, like, not the film.
I thought she was uneven, but could have been redeemed, like, as a character, not her personal redemption arc, but like the writing could have been fixed, yeah. But then it just went all craziness.
Well, I just thought, because my thing was, I just thought it was interesting that you had a female character that basically, you know, by the end of the season, willed reality back into existence. I mean, I thought that was pretty badass.
Okay, the end of the first season I liked. That part was good. A lot of the stuff at the beginning where it was like, we're going to have a love triangle. No, we're not. She's going to make moves on the doctor. No, she's not. That was all just kind of unsettling and weird.
Well, to be fair, a lot of that had to do with the reason they made Arthur Darvill a regular anyway. It was because, you know, Karen and Matt really didn't have any chemistry. But,
yeah.
Well, and I like Arthur Darvill. I really want to see that thing he's in with David Tennant right now. I've heard it's really good.
That wasn't. I found this out recently. That wasn't. That sounded like it wasn't a story necessity.
What was
the making Arthur Darvill more of a regular than he was supposed to be?
Yeah.
Well, that's weird because I thought it was brilliant.
Well, here's the thing. Okay.
Hi, Rob.
Two quick things. First of all, when Freema left the show, there was a directive from the BBC head of drama that Doctor Who was really, really great. However, it is still a primarily male-directed show. Write a character that the mothers and housewives can relate to. Thus, we got Donna.
It was great, except at the very end.
After Donna left, the new production team comes in. They get a directive from the BBC saying, okay, the numbers for BBC America and for this show in the States are huge. Write some of the characters and some of the arcs so that an American audience can relate to the plot and the drama. So you have to understand that even though Stephen Moffat is the showrunner, he's not getting everything he wants. And getting back to Arthur Darvill coming in, he was off the charts with scoring with points. They needed something else besides the Doctor. Then he was a character that related well. And again, in most, like most dramas, when they have an incidental character that really relates well,
mm-hmm.
you bring him in. So it worked in the way that Nikki did. So I mean, part of it is, yeah, Moffat has a problem writing for women, but he's also got a gun to his head to a certain point, because the ultimate goal now is to make money. It's a whole new era for the show in that it is the number one generating show for the BBC on 4 continents. So, which people like Tuffley and I would, if you would have told us, you know, 20 years ago, we would have laughed at you. So that's part of his issue. I do think to a point you're right that he can't really write women within a certain way. There is a Bible to the show that goes from producer to producer, and no matter who it is, they're going to have to follow certain things. There's certain protocols that are always going to have to. The companion, whoever writes that is going to have that put in.
Oh no, I agree. That's true. I think.
Well, hang on, Kim first.
I think that the best that the new Who has ever been was when it was Moffat writing in Davies' show. Because Davies is better with the characters and Moffat is better with the plots. So when you had those two together, that was when it was the best, you know? And so I think both eras have their own problems, but they're very different types of problems.
Yeah, I think now
they're very quickly the same problem, because Moffat has fallen into all the traps that Russell fell into.
Right.
Into make it the movie of the week, throw the plot out.
He has two clever ideas.
I went round and round to Paul with people on this. The best two stories of the season have been the dinosaur one and the cube one. And that's because they both sort of, the way that they use the narrative. Now, the thing I did like about Crimson Horror was when they borrowed all Rox's stuff and they sort of did the backtracking and explained how the Doctor got to where he was, mm-hmm. and the style that was done in. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these little glimpses of where they're trying to do some cool thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you're right. I think if Moffat either needs to run the show and not write any episodes, or just write episodes. He can't do both. Or write one episode. I'm fine if you write the opener and the finale. That's fine. You know?
Well, yeah. you know what I think what would help? And I know they don't do this in British production, but it's something Russell sounded like he wanted to do when they brought back the show, or at least have an attempt at having a writer's room.
Yeah.
Because that would at least bring more of a consistency in line with, okay. Because the problem with Amy was, particularly when they made the change to bring Rory in more than they had intended to, and a lot of the writers on that series talked about it was, well, when we were originally writing this episode, we didn't write anything for Rory.
Huh.
You kept hearing that.
Now let's find something to put in. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And the other thing that's interesting is, you know, when you study Doctor Who in the 70s and the 80s, particularly in the Pertwee era, if the writers wanted to get anything done, Barry Letts and Terrence Dick, for example, with Three Doctors, they go down to the pub where they can be left alone and come up with everything.
Yeah.
And now, sort of, because we live in such an instantaneous world, Moffat can't go to a bar with you know, J.K. Rowling and talk about a story. He can't go, you know, out with anybody. And
well, I've heard they've been having a lot of trouble with the Sherlock filming, with people, like, stalking them with their cell phone cameras and stuff, to the point that they were, like, putting out on Twitter, please leave us alone.
Well, they
had
that problem in the previous series of Sherlock, because they were filming Doctor Who at the same time, and the people with the cell phones were following Doctor Who.
But, I mean, the biggest thing, and this kind of came up a little bit, is the Paul thing. The biggest problem Stephen Moffat has this year is, no matter what he does with the 50th anniversary, he loses. Somebody's not going to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, what he's doing is actually probably the best he can do at this point with regard to putting old doctors in the story. It's the best he can do.
Well, here's the thing. Here's my thought on that. My thought on that is, did you see the five doctors?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I did. And it was
bad. That's everybody who's complaining the old doctors aren't in it. Everybody who's complaining the old doctors aren't in it, I go, have you seen the five doctors? Go back and
I will see you, have you seen your five doctors? But raise you, have you also seen Forrest Gump?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, they're going to do that?
That? There are rumors that they have digitally put Matt Smith in the seasons for part of Seeds of Doom.
Huh.
Okay.
And there's rumors that he's in parts of, like, he goes back and sort of doesn't interact with the doctors. They have footage they haven't put on DVDs or released. And
interesting. This is stuff from missing episodes and things like that?
Not necessarily missing episodes, but just stuff from scenes they didn't take or whatever, yeah. Right? Or they even could take it and jumble it around. I mean, the way things are now, they could digitally make that. But the rumor is he's going to weave around his own timeline and interact with his other doctors, but in a way that they are unaware that he is the new doctor. That is one of the big rumors that are out. But again, remember the Zygons can shapeshift, so is Tennant really the doctor? I mean, there's all this shit that, you know, just watch it and deal with it. No matter what Stephen Moffat does with the special, though, people are going to be pissed at him.
Yeah. And I will say...
I have to say, though, if the payoff for the name of the doctor, which, never mind, the payoff on it...
Oh, did you order your DVD from BBC Shop?
I'm very interested to see, from a writer's standpoint, how Widge takes it. After he sees it. And all I want to say is, watch The Silence in the Library one more time.
Yeah.
Well, we'll all have to do that before
next time. And perhaps The 11th Hour. You might want to watch that again, too.
I know that I
am critical of a lot of stuff he does, but it's because I know he can do better. Because
I've
seen him.
We all agree.
I have higher expectations because I know he can do it.
I mean,
well, okay, then should we bring up what Neil Gaiman gave us?
which yeah, I am horribly disappointed.
I loved it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I loved it.
Also, I had no idea that Warwick Davis was so foxy.
Well, I had to tell people that I didn't like it, and then I had to run.
I didn't.
I can see why people didn't like it.
Okay.
But then I don't really care because I thought it was great.
Well, here's the thing. I've been defending Doctor Who. This is like the first episode I did not like.
I didn't think it was as good as his previous one.
No.
But then I don't think anyone could have been as good as his previous one because you can only do that once.
Well, also because Doctor's wife wasn't so far into continuity.
Right.
Because you could be, technically that was our complaint about series 6, but, Doctor's Wife is basically its own story.
Mm-hmm.
And to a large extent, you know, Nightmare in Silver is as well, except for the fact that, you know, there's connecting material that goes to the whole Clara thing and some of it's a bit unnecessary, but, you know, because of where the episode is in the season, you kind of have to at least mention it. And, you know, if it had been, if it had happened like in the middle of the run, if it had been like, say, 2 weeks earlier,
it would have been better.
It would have been better.
Well, I actually, so
the more self-contained it would have been, I get what people are saying. But I just viewed by itself. And I think paired with Crimson Horror, I think it works better because you have two episodes where it sort of actually feels like Doctor Who. Whereas some of the other episodes earlier this year didn't.
I don't know. There were parts I didn't like because it's like, all right, for those of us that have been watching since the 70s, the idea of, you know, the entity that takes care of the Cybermen had a personality. And I'm like, I found that part hard to grasp, and that whole, you know, golem type thing, which was done in, you know, where, you know, you have a split personality type thing fighting over one body. I've seen that before.
I would say the best analogy I can make is this, kid. Nightmare in Silver is the Doctor Who version of Best of Both Worlds. And Name of the Doctor is the Doctor Who equivalent of Zahadu.
Okay.
Oh, dear. The thing is, I liked it because it made the Cybermen actually, you know, scary.
I think one of the scariest ones was the one where, it was the Tenet.
They were
at that dinner party thing.
Oh yeah, I agree with you that they were really scary.
Those were Peak World Cybermen.
They weren't the original Cybermen, which I think is what we were getting here.
But even still, the original Cybermen, like even during the second Doctor, they're really scary because they're non-human.
Yeah.
They're devoid of any humanity, and they were scary.
I wasn't in love with the sort of Borgy costuming choices.
Yeah.
I thought they could have made better choices costume-wise to kind of depict that.
Right.
But I liked it overall. I thought Clara was really cool in it. I liked her a lot.
I was disappointed.
I love the fact that from the cliffhanger of the Crimson Horror, you would think the kids were going to be an annoying presence in the episode. And the first damn thing they did was write the kids out of the episode.
I love that. But here's the thing that I found disappointing, and somebody brought this up, and I can see why. This is why the Doctor doesn't travel with children, because they will get in harm's way.
However,
Neil.
Plus, he's out of hard candy.
Neil can write for children. So here were two characters. I liked them, especially the kid. Here's a sandwich. I'll play.
Oh, yeah, I liked him.
I liked that. And they gave them nothing. So I was kind of disappointed in that because, you know, here's this guy who's like the kid, you know, I can see where Gaiman picked out from, like, you know, Willy Wonka, you know, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, any of those kind of adolescent trope type, you know, genre stories. And it didn't seem like he really, you know, played the, you know, he picked, but it didn't really seem like he really followed. He could have made it a great episode.
Yeah.
Well, hang on. Rox, just to address the whole thing about you not finding the Cybermen scary, there's very little that you find scary. So, I mean, to be fair.
This is
no,
true.
No, honestly, I know, but here's the thing. They are the scariest things. In the early Tenet years, because, you know, you can have your brain removed and put into there. That is scary because yeah. All of a sudden you've lost your body. You've actually even lost your mind and you're just this, you know, man, you know, a brain in tin can. It is a scary thing, you know, one of those things. But in this they weren't really that scary.
Well, I like the line where Porridge is talking to Clara about it's hard to fight an enemy that uses your spare parts of your army against you.
Yeah.
That was nice.
That was nice. And I don't think the point I enjoyed the use of the Cybermen because it seemed to make a logical progression. Okay, so if we're stuck with the Pete World Cybermen, you know, it was sort of like, oh, they're going to merge because it's an upgrade.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of felt a little more logical than, okay, now we have to erase the Pete World Cybermen and bring the other Cybermen back without explaining it. So I kind of like that, you know, they were at least smart enough to upgrade themselves.
Yeah.
And kind of compensate for the whole gold thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a patch for the gold thing. Finally.
Yeah. That was cute.
So, you know.
I did also like the random army person.
Yeah.
Are they still? The Cybermen in the basement was like, can I hide? Am I allowed to hide?
But, you know, the thing is the slacker army guys were kind of used in the Christmas special. With Bill Bailey, you know, so yeah. It's like, oh, okay, I've seen them. We've already done that.
I don't remember the Christmas special.
It was the World War II.
The wardrobe one where love saved the husband.
I actually liked that one.
I found that one kind of forgettable.
Can I tell you something else?
It wasn't as good as the one with the flying shark.
No.
Yeah,
oh, no.
Sorry.
Oh, no. Hands down.
You're going to have the ood in it. I'm sorry. That's got to happen.
I know. If you're going to do a Christmas special, you know, the Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge one was awesome. I liked that.
And I wasn't here when you guys talked about the Hyde episode.
I loved it.
I loved it right up until the last 2 minutes.
Wait, the which one?
The ghost story one.
Oh, the ghost story one. I like that one.
Oh, yeah. I like that one right up until, you know, oh, we had to make it a love story. What? Yeah.
I know, but here's the thing. No, here's the thing. We didn't really talk about that one because I love the fact it was the Shirley Jackson story or the Haunting of Hell House or anyone that has seen that.
I knew you'd bring that up.
Oh, yeah. That or, you know, or the Haunting of Hill House because there were two. There was the Legend of Hell House that had Roddy McDowall, which is an amazing film. And it had, of all things, a really cool cameo by Michael Goh as a dead man.
Yeah.
That is fucking awesome. And the thing is they used computers and stuff.
Yeah.
And then there is the legend or the Haunting of Hill House, which is based on Shirley Jackson. So this was a really nice, and they even had the doctor with the little duffel coat.
Yeah.
So there were some really cool items going on.
No, I love everything but the last 2 minutes of that episode.
Yeah. Well,
that thing that, you know, since, you know, we've gone to all, you know, taking the TARDIS into the bubble universe is such a problem, blah, 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 blah. Oh, let's do it again.
That part kind of felt pasted.
If you cut that part out, if you cut that last 2 minutes out, it's dead perfect.
Right. And I thought it was really scary.
Yeah.
Like, it was good.
Me out.
I mean, they paced it, like I said.
Yeah.
Watch, and that's my recommendation. Watch Legend of Hell House with Roddy McDowall and watch Haunting, the original.
Yes,
with Clara Bloom,
yeah.
Clara Bloom of the Haunting of Hill House, but you know, based on Shirley Jackson's work, and they're both great films.
What was great about Hyde, real quick, that I liked about it is for the first time in the new series, there was no sound. It was just quiet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice, and I loved it.
I love Murray Gold. It is nice not to have sound. It was nice
yeah.
to sort of complete quiet. That was awesome. And I yeah. really liked how they used that. I mean,
yeah.
And you know, and I thought Gregory Scott was actually really good in it. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's been things I've loved about every episode, and I haven't hated all of them. I just really hate the way they're sort of running roughshod over narrative. And like Crimson Horror, we never really got a motive, or why this woman's still sort of doing this, or how. I mean, there's a lot of.
I think she was just a bitch.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. And
yes, but just a bitch is never an adequate character motivation, Scott.
Yeah.
No, right. There are people who are just bitches.
Why does she have to be a bitch? Why couldn't she just be a mean person? Why does she have to be a bitch?
Yeah, why Scott, what's with the gendered like insult?
Yeah, I'm just trying to give it a clear
I think more than anything seems to be, I think, a genuine complaint because of, I think, what was the deal with Moffat making the point that, oh, it's all going to be standalone this year, standalone episodes. And you look at some of these episodes, particularly and Cold War could have been two parts. Cold War could have been two parts.
Yeah.
And I think it could have been a lot more credible had it been two parts. Crimson Horror could have been two parts, but I liked it at the pace that it was.
You know, I actually miss the older Doctor Who's where you have longer shows.
Yes.
Well, I think, and I think here's the problem that I think they were in love with the standalone episode idea because the chief complaint from series six is all encompassing arc plot and every episode is connected. We hated it, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't why we hated Series 6.
Well, it's also guys in suits telling you what to do, too. I mean,
yeah.
If you're trying to sell Doctor Who on BBC America to an audience, you're not going to be able to get them hooked on it if they have to know all this backdrop. Which is part of the reason why we got that really stupid Amy narrative at the beginning when they aired them over here.
Well, yeah, but my counter to that is BBC's own original productions. My counter to that is they don't have a long previously preamble on Copper. They don't have a long previously preamble on Orphan Black. They just go.
But neither of those are basically the bread and butter of the network, and none of them are the – I mean, it has been an absolute money machine. So they know Copper, they know Orphan Black are going to make a certain amount of finite money, and that's it. Doctor Who, it is – pretty much grind every dime we can get out of it now because, you know,
yeah.
the BBC market is the new Ferengi. I mean, they are going to drive as much dime out of a dime as they can get on the show as they can.
Here's my question. Do you think that's inevitably going to kill it?
It won't kill it because it's an institution in England. What it may do is like every show in America sort of does, where a particular show has a peak moment and it dies down. It'll still be on in England. It may not be like the biggest thing on in BBC America. I think it'll level off to where it was in 2005, where people like Tufts and I are like, hey, let's check this out and see what they're doing. And we watch it every week. And it just sort of goes back to the average fan, the ordinary fan, and not the sort of people that watch it that don't watch any science fiction, that watch it as a drama series and not as a science fiction show with 50 years of baggage. I think it's going to go back to that. It's sort of like right now you're pulling the slingshot back and how long is that elastic going to last, you know? And I think the bubble bursts when Matt Smith leaves.
Well, I think
Tenet was a nice build-up. But Matt Smith sort of is working well enough.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, David Tennant would have worked. The problem is they didn't have the machinery in place on the American side to get him in front of cameras like they do Matt Smith.
Well, the problem is in America, when Tenet started, they were still airing on Sci-Fi and Sci-Fi was just sort of stuck with it. So had BBC America had Tenet from the beginning, I think you would have seen a different promotional push.
And to be fair, I mean, BBC America is doing an outstanding job of promoting it. They're doing,
yeah.
You know, except for, you know, the repeated showings where they cut them out a little bit. But, I mean, they're acting like a network is supposed to act, to be fair, from a business standpoint. They're acting like a network is supposed to act, you know, in terms of how they do their money. But they have, and they've gone out of their way to give fans a little bit more in terms of those, like, behind-the-scenes things and content. They're really sort of trying to maintain something special with that show, which never got, say, from Paramount when Star Trek was on or DS9 was on. I mean, they really are sort of understanding that they're the caretakers of these shows.
Well, let's not even get into Paramount.
But they're slaves to the fact that they have to make money from commercials, unlike the BBC. So that's the good and the bad of BBC America. I mean, you know, you can't expect them to not run things the way they do. And the fact that they gave us those really awesome Doctor Revisited specials, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, those were cool.
Yeah, those are actually pretty great. And, you know, so it's a give and take with it. But I think that it's going to level off at some point. And I think when Matt Smith leaves and we get a new Doctor, if it's at all a Doctor that, like, the traditional fans of the show like, but will he play in America? I mean, because kind of, not as much with Matt Smith, but with the new Doctor, it's going to be the first Doctor that's going to be cast for an international audience around the world.
Well,
you know, Matt Smith was cast sort of, he was an unknown, but Moffat knew he was a good actor, and a lot of people had seen him do some stuff and had really great things to say about him. Now there's going to be a lot of pressure to get a guy who is going to really work in America and Australia and Europe at the same time. I think he's going to get a, you know, and that's where it's going to get interesting.
In terms of an American audience, though, I don't think it's solely going to be change of doctor.
Well, I think
because we've the viewing audience, or at least the majority of the viewing audience, has through other American shows has sort of gotten used to the idea of, you know, the show will change, you know.
Well, I'm going to say, though, I think that people who started with Matt Smith and have never changed doctors before.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be kind of the determining factor, because when you talk to an American audience about changing a lead actor, changing the casting of a lead actor, they think the two Darrens and they think it's going to be stupid.
Or the two, Beckys.
Yeah. And so that's a pretty significant, obstacle to have to overcome. But that's on top of the sort of everybody loves their first doctor the most and you never like the new one for a while because you're still mourning the old one kind of thing that happens whenever there's a regeneration. I mean, I still think that Eccleston was the best one and he's the one I like the most because he was the first one I saw. So, yeah.
But I think the audience has been prepped for this. So I think it's going to depend a lot more on the quality of the show post regeneration.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that it would previously. I think previously, basically, if people didn't like the doctor, they'd be out. But I think now you're looking at something where people are a little more willing to accept, okay, the change if the quality's there.
I'm just saying Idris Elba for the doctor. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yes. My God. That would I'd be awesome.
And I'm just going to go ahead and say that. I agree. And
they're not
that should
get
happen.
They can't afford it. I'm sorry.
We've been here for 5 hours. You want to do introductions now?
No.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
He's busy playing Heimdall now.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to keep him too busy.
I was being snarky.
Oh,
see, Kim,
the problem is you still sound so delightful. I can't tell.
That's my secret weapon.
It is. I found it.
Have you got the desktop yet?
Wait, which one?
Yeah, the Shield one.
Oh, there's a Shield desktop.
Oh God.
I mean, besides like the homemade ones that I've had for a while.
See, which I thought she already had it up and she was looking at it, and that's why she sounded so pleasant during the
Notice that desktop has desk in it.
It also has top in it.
Uh-huh.
If it was desk tip, then Scott.
What is
would
his
be
password?
Aroused.
I don't know.
No, Tuffley, it's like from Sesame Street. desk.
No, that was electric. That was electric company.
Company. Electric company. Oh, all
right. Your fan.
Desk. Top. Desktop.
See,
shoe.
I don't remember my childhood.
I liked Square One because it had that math net thing, and it was like continued every week, and I liked that.
Okay, electric company.
Yeah, what? Is that the one with the letter people? What's the one with the letter people?
You know, the letter people rocks were made here in St. Louis.
Oh.
And the woman who did the voice of Mrs. O is actually a friend of mine's boss at the ad agency.
No way.
So whenever I go to see her, I don't even, it's to the point where he knows now. I don't go to see him at work. I go to her office because she's got it in a case.
No
and
way!
I'm like, come on. I know! And I'm like, come on, let me play with Miss
Let
O.
Me
like,
touch
no.
Mrs. O.
Okay, hang on. Let me just get this straight. Rob, did you just tell us the story of O?
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry.
No,
I thought it was Kim the one laughing and not Scott.
That's a great point.
Well, I don't know what you're implying.
No O's were harmed in making this podcast.
I'm
probably
too well read, Kim.
I'm very well read.
I don't think he's implying anything.
No comments.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, Rox, a lot of those sets were like around in places till about 4 years ago, and now they're gone.
Oh,
there's only a handful of puppets left.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, that's what, you know, the fun sets could really use a squish box.
Yeah.
Could use a what?
A squish box. They had a game show on the letter people, but they had a squish box. So that way they put two vowels together, two consonants together to make a sound. They got put in the squish box.
I see.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
That's a different meaning for Scott, but.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say.
That's an entirely different meaning for Scott.
Wow. From Doctor Who to the letter people in 4 minutes.
I was going to bring up something here in a minute, but I'll wait after introductions.
So is it like Mama's got a squish box and Daddy never makes it vowels at night? Is that?
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, the squish box is their way of explaining why the letter C and the letter K can both make the K sound at the same time.
Yep.
Am I right, Rock?
Yep. You are correct, sir.
Is that in the canon for, Letter people canon?
I don't know.
I'm sure that there's a forum for that.
Oh, I'm sure that there's fanfic of the letter people too, but I don't want to think about that right now.
Sometimes I go on the internet and just look around to see what I can find.
Wow.
What have you found recently, Kim? Why would you possibly want to do that?
It's Kim's internet corner. And by that, I mean that she found something and then backed it into a corner with a chair so she could kill it.
Miami Vice Impreg photo manipulations.
No, no.
Okay, Kim. Okay, Kim. I have to ask this so I can understand the nature of my trauma.
Do you really have to ask this question?
No, I have to understand what trauma I have just experienced. Kim. Are we talking the original series or the feature film?
The original series.
Okay. Ooh. Now I know what kind of trauma. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ouch.
Ah! And there's no donuts! No donuts!
And it's wonderful donut. How she's laughing so sweetly.
I'm in a good mood. It's been a good week.
It's like, you know what? It's like a geek version of what's happening to Theon.
Kim, it's only Tuesday.
Well, I was kind of meaning the whole previous week, what with Iron Man and Person of Interest and the S.H.I.E.L.D. preview coming out. I missed the
Person of Interest finale. And
it's really good. You should get it.
I have to find it. So.
Send me an email.
Kim, this week we have a Benedict Cumber badass coming up.
I know.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Like, I'm really not sure how I'm going to be able to contain myself the next several weeks. Because then in early June, we've got Much Ado About Nothing coming out. And at some point, Pacific Rim is going to come out.
Well,
and
Kim, if you can get up here. Like,
I think I'm coming pretty good.
Those films in one day. Because there's two screenings Thursday.
Oh. I have to work.
Definitely tough for you.
I have a job.
I know.
Can't you be, like, sick?
Not
I'm
now.
I'm pretty sure they would notice. Plus, I'm taking leave next week anyway because we have to go to a graduation, which is being held on a Thursday afternoon, requiring us to take 2 days off work. Like, really?
Well, that's now, Kim, that's when you schedule a graduation in the hopes that you'll get presents instead of presents, if you know what I mean. So well done for subverting their plot and actually showing up. Well done.
Well, you know.
I was on a road to Tuffley and not graduated from the third grade.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Where'd that come from?
Wow.
Sorry.
Well, you know, don't apologize. No one apologizes here. In Alabama, so technically, that's probably not that far off. But
I don't know. I'm from Missouri, so we only get to the fifth grade.
Well, so. Yeah, I went and got my GED for the third grade, so barely made it. So anyway, we should do introductions and then move on to recommendations. I think.
Okay.
Yes. So all right, we'll do introductions and we'll do them starting now.
We've seen you staggering out of the work week, but now it's time to buck up, little camper. The weekend is here. This is a needcoffee.com podcast, and we're going to help you the rest of the way home. Stand by for Weekend Justice.
Justice podcast here on needcoffee.com, the number one audio internet train wreck, and we're here in the hall of Weekend Justice with the Weekend Justice League, and I will endeavor to introduce them going from my right to your left. We have Rob coughing.
Hello, sports.
As opposed to Soul coughing, which would be completely different.
I was almost going to make that joke.
But you had enough sense not to. Me, I don't. That And the person with good taste in jokes is Kim. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Hello. We also have Rox the Spaz House here. Hi, Rox.
Good day.
Good day. We also have Monsieur Tuffley is here. Hello.
What's up?
Yep. Scott C is with us. Hi, Scott.
If someone asks you to be queen of the universe, you say yes.
This is true.
Well, you said no.
What? We also have... on the board, John from the Unique Geek. Hi, John.
Why is it always cock with you?
I've been wondering that for a long time.
John, did you just give yourself Huggy Bear theme music?
No, that's our standard generic porn music.
Yeah.
Oh.
You should know this. It plays every time Tuffley comes in the room. And then comes in the room.
Well. I thought
Yakety Sax was the thing that played.
I thought that was just in my head.
Now, here's the question. Is
Unless
it
I'm not mistaken,
music?
A sexual reference.
Is it Huggy yes. Bear music or is it Snuggle Bear music?
No, oh, I God. Hate that bear.
Okay.
Or is it more like Ken?
Okay. I want to know.
Did not think you were going there this week, but okay. All right.
Hey, well, that's another attempt at, Tuffley, that's another attempt at sponsorship.
Yep. Well, there's another one.
I fucking
not getting.
Hate that bear.
Why?
He's creepy. It's like possessed of the damned.
So unsexy.
Like, just like all up in your clothes and touching your thing.
That guy looks dirty.
Bitch.
They're touching their little dirty hands.
Oh, tell me we got that. Tell me we got that. Please tell me we got that. Gotta have a line
where it's like, why did it have to be Snuggy Bear?
Well, it's not Snuggy Bear, it's Snuggle Bear.
Snuggle Bear, whatever. Oh, shut up.
Oh my God. That's funny. All right. So, to get away from the traumatic bear, we should probably move towards the realm of recommendations. Who wants to go first?
I will.
Oh, go Rocks.
Okay. So I made two recommendations. That's Legend of Hell House and The Haunting of Hill House, the one with Claire Bloom. I'm going with a couple art items. I picked up Mark Ryden's The Gay 90s book. Anybody that knows it, the artwork, Scott, is pertaining to the fictitious, you know, the idea of the gay 90s.
Apparently, 1890s?
1890s. Which is funny because the people that actually coined that term was around the 20s. So it was a time period of 10 years that it was like us saying, oh, the 50s was the golden years type of thing. Basically, the people of the 20s thought like the 1890s was, you know, really great. However, this Mark Ryden, fantastic artist, has a really cool art book out of all of, you know, of this series. And, he's got like, a girl riding a tandem bike with Jesus, and he's got all the wounds and stuff. You have to look it up. It's very dark. However, the colors, Kim, you would like it because he likes painting creepy pictures with happy colors.
That
so there's a lot
like
of
something that I would like.
You would
like a visual art version of The Smiths.
Exactly. a lot of the girls. Oddly enough, for a long time, people thought he had this weird fixation on Christina Ricci, which, you know, he was modeling a lot. And he also has this thing about Abraham Lincoln. So Lincoln, Jesus, and Christina Ricci sort of show up in his paintings from time to time. So that's what I've got. And it's a really cool, if you're an art person, pick that up. Let's see. Also, David Hockney came out with this book last year, and it is The Secret Knowledge. And this guy is a famous, prolific author or artist. Look him up. He's really good. He actually latched onto, the capabilities of the iPhone when the app Brushes came out. So he was actually doing a lot of artwork on an iTouch and an iPhone and then went on to the iPad. However, last year he's been doing research on how the masters, such as Vermeer, Rembrandt, created some of their work. One person pointed out that if you look at some of the artwork, almost 80% of all paintings of portraits, people were left-handed, meaning that there are some woodblock, you know, such as the Camera Lucida, which was a prism that you can actually look through and project an image onto a piece of paper, and you can actually sketch over it. So it's like a tracing device. But he actually came up with this, a lot of theories that a lot of the, you know, artists during that time period used optics, mirrors, lenses and stuff. They actually used that in The Girl with Pearl Earring, that he actually had sort of a camera lens that he actually used, which is funny because, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, that means these people were not that great of a draftsman. No. You're using technology to actually create artwork just like we're doing now. So if anything, they were forward thinkers. So it's not like he dispels the magic of art. It's first and foremost, what I learned in art school, art is a business. Art was always a business. If you watch The Pearl Earring, art is a business. You know, if you watch, you know, the, you know, movie with Charlton Heston as Michelangelo. Art is a business. It always was. And if you, you know, and even then, there's a scene in that one where he uses a tracing, you know, he sketches this out. Instead of doing another freehand sketch of the sketch he did, he colors the back, you know, and does a tracing.
Yeah, well, it's just like with, like medieval documents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the art was, you did, they did pouncing and they did stuff like that because, you know, they were producing copies. They weren't going to necessarily have somebody who was as good at drawing in every monastery that needed to copy whatever book.
No. No. So if you're an art person, this is a really cool book. And pick up, there's a first edition. Pick up the second one because he actually adds to it. So if you're an art person, Secret Knowledge, for anybody interested in that kind of time period in art and stuff, or if you're looking at enhancing some of your own creativity, because there's like this other artist I'd love, he actually models his art like Hieronymus Bosch, but he updates everything.
Ooh.
You know, to current pop culture stuff. So I am done.
Hey Rox.
Mm-hmm.
So question.
Yes.
So it goes interviewer, interviewee, right?
Yeah.
And also you have employer and employee, right?
Yes.
So do you have Jack Reacher, Christina Ricci?
Oh, God.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. Hey, yeah.
Mystery solved. Thank you. Thank you very much. Try the veal. All right, who's next?
I'll go.
Go, Tumbly.
We will start with something free. There is a compilation record that Adult Swim's put out on their website called Garage Swim. So if you like bands like the Black Lips and all of the garage bands that are coming out, go check that out. There is actually a new track from the Black Lips on it, so go check that out. And that is free from the Adult Swim website. We will go with the obvious pick, which is Vampire Weekend's Modern Vampires of the City, which is really fantastic. And I will just say Step is probably the best song they've ever done.
Yeah.
Is that on the home share?
That is on the home share.
I'll have to get that.
You may have at.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love stuff.
We'll also go with somebody who band Bradford Cox is in like, God, 14,000 bands. The other one you may have heard of is Atlas Sound. His other band called Deer Hunter has a new record out called Monomania, which is quite good as well. It's sort of they usually do a lot more atmospheric, kind of more Britpop-y kind of sound. But on this record, it's a little bit that he's been hanging out a lot with the Black Lips guys. So the influence has kind of ended up here. So that's really good. I enjoyed that. I will also go with something Widge turned me on to, which was Alice Russell's To Dust record. Yes. If you like your British female soul, there you go. Go get. Love that record. And I'll mention, cause we'll talk about Daft Punk and the National probably the next time, cause they'll come out during the bye week. But,
we're going to go see the National.
Yes, September. I did want to mention, if you haven't had a chance to check out some of the documentaries, that they've been putting out in conjunction with the Daft Punk record, the Collaborators series, go check some of those out when you get a chance. They've got a couple. They've got one with Niles Rogers. They've got one with Giorgio Moroder. And they just put out a really nice one this week with Paul Williams. So check those out. Those are really cool. And, of course, we'll talk about the actual record itself, which is, by the way, streaming on iTunes if you want to check the whole thing out now. Mm-hmm. But we'll probably talk about it a little more when it's actually out for people to buy. So I'll stop there.
Toughly, real quick. I posted a link. There was a really cool article in the New York Times magazine about OMD celebrating 35 years. And on their website, they have the exclusive Dresden video, which is actually pretty good. But it's really cool on how they talk about how they still, even after 35 years, they still don't fit in anywhere, but they're fine with that. So check that out. I'll relink it if need be. So.
Yeah, they've always been very cool, and their recent record is quite good as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the record they just put out like a couple of months ago is really good. That was it for me.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, thank you, Tuffley. Who's next?
I'll go.
Go, Kim.
Okay, so first I have kind of a weird, unusual CD to recommend under certain circumstances. If you are interested in, like, if you liked the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, or you liked the Cold Mountain soundtrack, you should buy this thing I'm about to tell you to buy. If you really hated those things, you probably shouldn't buy it. If you have a historical interest in early American folk music, you might want to pick it up. If you hate folk music, you probably don't want to buy it. So with that stage set, this is a two-disc set called Awake My Soul and Help Me to Sing. It's a soundtrack. And it's actually one disc is Awake My Soul and the other is Help Me to Sing. This is the companion disc to a documentary about shape note singing, which is an early American form of choral singing where they were basically, it was for people who didn't know how to read music. It was like this system that they taught, and it's based on like early English tones that has just, it doesn't have the eight thing. It's like fa, sol, la, do or something instead of all the different ones. And the different notes had different shapes. Like one of them's a triangle, one of them's a rectangle, whatever. And it's sung, it's very interesting because the four parts are set up in a square and the leader stands in the middle of the square and they kind of swing their arm back and forth to keep the time, and it's sung a cappella, and it's generally sung very loudly and enthusiastically, and it's almost unearthly sounding. Like, I think it's really cool. It's very, very different from any other type of music.
Is this the trail that the BioShock stuff led you to?
Yeah, actually, it was a kind of a Google trail that ended up with me discovering this. The BioShock stuff isn't shape note, but it made me, because there's some old hymns on the BioShock Infinite soundtrack, which is also quite good, that got me kind of interested in this. And I've actually done some shape note singing in choir before, but this is, the first disc is all actual recordings, kind of taken live as part of the documentary of actual, you know, groups doing shape note singing. And then the second disc is, like folk artists doing interpretations of shape note songs. And all of these songs basically they come from this book that was published in the 1800s called The Sacred Harp. So sometimes they call it sacred harp singing. But it's very interesting, and I think it sounds really cool. So if you're interested, check it out. If you do a little Googling, you can listen to a couple of the songs on the website for the documentary too. I think the documentary aired on PBS, but it's an interesting and unusual thing. And if you're interested in that genre of music or in American musical history, give it a try. So that's Musically. Also, Little Boots has something new out, but I haven't heard it yet. So I will refrain from recommending it until I've listened to it. But I really liked her previous thing. So I'm going to say probably a goodbye if you liked her previous one. Cause my friend who turned me on to the first one told me this one's good too, but I haven't had a chance to get it yet. And then the second thing I've got is continuing in the theme of Kim Reed's comics now. Hooray! I have a couple comics to recommend. If you like Avengers stuff and you like Spider-Man, but you don't want to get into long like arcs, you can pick up the trade for Avenging Spider-Man. And I forget the title of the particular one. I'm going to have to Google it real quick. But the
it's
one
called The Good, The Green, and The Ugly.
Yes, thank you. Do you have it up in your room? Is that why I don't see it?
Yeah, you left it up here.
Okay. So yeah, The Good, The Green, and The Ugly. And it's got a story that is Spider-Man and She-Hulk, a story that's Spider-Man and Captain Marvel, and a story that's Spider-Man and Deadpool. And those are pretty fun. I was particularly fond of the Captain Marvel one, but they were all three pretty good, except the Deadpool one is kind of confusing, but I think that's what Deadpool is meant to be, so I didn't sweat it too hard. The other one I have is put out by Image, And it's actually, I think that there are four trades of this, and I'm not sure if the book is still current or not, but the book is called iZombie. It's like iPad, but zombies.
And it's Vertigo.
Is it Vertigo, not Image? Okay,
it's Vertigo.
Sorry.
And I don't think Vertigo. The series is still going on because Alred's doing FF right now.
Alred's doing FF right now. But this, it caught my eye, even though this is one of those that I went into the comic shop a couple times and I kept seeing it and thinking about it. But I was kind of turned off by the fact that it was zombies because I'm not a big zombie person because I don't like gross things. But this is actually, they're kind of like slacker hipster zombies. And I think it's actually a very kind of quirky and charming book. And I've liked it a lot. I've read the first three. I haven't read the last one yet, but, so that is, there's the first one is called, I think it's called The Quick and the Dead. One of them, the second one's called like I Vampire. But if you look for I Zombie, you'll find them, you know, on Amazon or whatever. But the protagonist of this book is a zombie named Gwen. And, she can maintain her ability to not be a shambling horror as long as she eats a brain about once a month, and then she's okay. So her solution for this, because Gwen lives in Oregon, her solution for this is to work at the biodegradable eco-friendly graveyard that doesn't embalm. And she's a grave digger there. So she can just go and, you know, find herself what she needs whenever, and it's not going to be all gross with chemicals. And one of her buddies is a ghost of a girl who died in the 60s. And one of her buddies is a were-terrier.
Wow.
And they have adventures. And it's a lot of fun, and I've liked it a lot. And I also really like Mike Allred's art. He's one of my favorite comic artists. So, and he does the art for it, and it's really good. I actually, the whole reason I started reading FF was that I saw the preview for that book in like point one that they did that had little stories from a bunch of different books. And I really liked the art so much, I had to actually pick up a book and read it because I thought it was so cool. So pick up iZombie. Trust me, it's not gross zombies. It's fun zombies.
Kim, first off, hipsters ruin everything.
No, but they're fun.
Well, they're dead hipsters. That makes them better.
And she has super cute hair. They're dead hipsters, so you can enjoy that part. And then also there is a government-sponsored, like, zombie monster fighting thing where they have basically bound the spirits of dead presidents into corpses so that they can be, like, undead killing machines. And Zombie Lincoln is their boss.
All right.
It's pretty great.
You now have Roxy's attention.
Anything that includes Zombie Lincoln,
yeah,
you know, is pretty sweet.
Yeah, so pick up the Mark Ryden book.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you were saying that. And then the other thing is, if you're not reading Hawkeye, what's wrong with you? Start reading Hawkeye. It's amazing and awesome and beautiful and perfect in every way. And then Young Avengers continues to get better and better and better. And Kate is finally back in Young Avengers, and she's awesome, and she has a laser bow, you guys. A laser bow.
Is that the bow from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon?
It kind of looks like it.
Wow.
I don't know. It's apparently some sort of Kree thing, because now Novar is her boyfriend or something. I think he's her fuck buddy. She's just using him for his body.
Wow. There you go.
But he's all anxious to impress her. It's really cute.
Kim, have you ever heard of the group Trio Medieval?
I don't think so, although it sounds vaguely familiar.
They're from Oslo, and I don't know. They sort of do a medieval polyphonic sort of singing. There's three of them, of course, but they kind of do this. I couldn't even tell you, you know, almost like this circular type of singing and stuff. So you need to look into them. If not, I can hook you up, because I saw them in concert at a church that they were touring, and they're fantastic.
That you sounds know, cool.
It is. But yeah, look them up, and they're, you know, I'm sure you can get an inkling of, you know, even off of iTunes of some of their music, and
see if they're on like Spotify or something.
Yeah, actually, the thing is they did have a Grammy Award. They were nominated for an album in 2007 for folk songs.
Hmm.
Oh, and she does this cool thing. One of them does like a cow, you know, calling the, you know, unlike, you know, calling, you know, pigs, there's like a Norwegian calling cows song and stuff that she does. that she'll do in concert. And it's really cool. So anyway,
I wasn't aware that was its own genre.
It is. Apparently
good
it
to
is.
Know.
So Kim?
Yes?
Just about Shape Notes?
Uh-huh.
That's the name of my compilation album with music inspired by the Halloween films.
Woo. I haven't seen those because I don't like gross, scary things.
Thank you, Scott, for at least acknowledging it.
I'm sorry.
Well, Shape Notes is different from Pull Shapes. She does not.
Yes, I do know that. Because of Phonogram, which is made by the same people who make Young Avengers, and you should also read that.
Phonogram 3 is coming sometime.
Someday. But I can't begrudge it because Young Avengers. I love them so much.
Aww.
You hear that, Kelby?
Kim could stop if she wanted to.
No, she can't.
But it's why would late. I want to when there are so many wonderful things?
Widge, it's a process. Something has to break her heart eventually, and it just has to happen.
I know. It happens to all of us.
It's cute. It's cute. It's cute, and I've enjoyed
it. We've all been there. But all I can say, Tuffly, is that when it finally happens, you're welcome to come crash on my couch for a few days until she gets done breaking shit. Just looking out for your safety. Anyway, so Kim, are you?
She'll always have Coulson.
Yes, I will.
Oh dear.
Hey, Kim.
Although I think Lee might beat me.
Hey, Kim.
Yes.
Welcome to level 7, Kim.
Thank you.
All right, is that your recommendations?
I think that'll be enough for this time.
Oh, good, excellent. Thank you, Kim. All right, who's next?
I am.
Go, Scott.
I've got a book, big surprise. It is The Secret of Chanel No. 5, The Intimate History of the World's Most Famous Perfume. And it is a very interesting story because it talks about Coco Chanel's early life and how that sort of formed her vision of how Chanel No. 5 was going to be, you know, sort of a mix between sort of like that fresh smell of like, of laundered clothing and then, but also the seductive, fragrances of like, you know, let's be honest, prostitutes.
I don't think prostitutes can afford Chanel No. 5.
No, this is back in the old days. This is back in the old days.
Prostitutes were better paid in the old days?
Yeah. But what was interesting though was that, in 1924, Coco Chanel actually sold most of the rights to Chanel No. 5 to another company that was able to make, that was able to branch her, better able to distribute the perfume. So.
Right. And that's how we got Cocoa Puffs.
Oh, which.
Sorry.
Which.
Sorry.
But the thing is, it's like for decades, she technically didn't own the rights to Chanel No. 5. It was made by another company. So, it's like, you know, it's the scent is so connected with her, but legally, you know, she didn't really have that much direction on, like, how it was distributed. Because one of the things they did during the war, during the Second World War, is the company decided, you know, let's put it in, like, U.S. Army commissaries and sell it tax-free for the army. And Coco Chanel, when she found out, was horrified because she thought this was supposed to be a luxury product and they're selling it in the PX. So it's interesting, you know, how she developed like almost a love-hate relationship with the perfume.
Now Scott, is that when she developed Mambo No. 5 or was that later?
Oh no, that was later.
Okay.
That was later when she was trying to come up with other perfumes.
Hmm.
I've got to say, I have tried to like Chanel No. 5 because it's like, ooh, the classic perfume, but I don't know, it smells really bad on me.
It's cloying.
It's very overpowering to me. I like Coco Mademoiselle, though.
Yeah. My mom would, I actually like Shalimar better, I think, out of the expensive
stuff. See, I can't do like the woody orientals. I'm more of a fresh floral girl. Or sometimes like the green tea sort of stuff. Or, ooh, Jo Malone Orange Blossom.
All right, then how about like Estee Lauder's Tresor? That's nice. That's really nice.
I don't
think
I know that one. Oh, I like nice. I like Paris. It's a little heavy.
Yeah.
But I really like the way it smells.
Then, all right, Karl Lagerfeld's got, he had one, Sun Moon Stars. That was nice. It was like a clean smell.
I like the clean.
Yeah.
It's, I have a trouble with a lot of commercial perfumes though. Like they make me sneeze. So I go B-Pal a lot of the time.
I do too now. Yeah.
They don't make me sneeze like the other ones do, but there still are some like commercial ones that I really like.
Rox?
Yes.
You were talking that you like Shalimar?
Yeah.
You'll be pleased to know they apparently reunited in 2009.
Yeah, I was just waiting.
With and without Jody Watley.
Oh, well, Kim, you're too young. I remember when Giorgio of Beverly Hills was the big thing. And it was like,
it's 80s,
90s. Yeah,
because they had the rip-offs at the drugstore.
Yes, and it smelled like bug spray.
Oh my gosh. See, when I was in high school, the big trendy one was CK1 because that had just come out.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like every annoying person at my high school reeked of CK1 all the time.
True story. I was out riding my bike the other Sunday and I turned the corner and this Jeep drives past. I swear to God, the guy loaded up with aftershave. You could smell
My gosh.
I wanted to ride as quickly as possible and say, dude, you don't need to bathe in it. Oh my God.
Weapon. Oh my gosh. When I was in college, I was an editor of one of the sections in the campus newspaper. And I had this one writer where when I was in the editing room and he came in, there was a hallway and then there was the outer office. And then there was the editing room that was on the inside. And we could smell him coming when he entered the outer door. I had to try to give him assignments while holding my breath. It was awful because he was so much cologne. So much.
Yep. Did you remember what the overpowering scent was? Was it Old Spice?
I didn't recognize it as anything other than a...
Yeah.
So, Rox...
Yes.
You were saying that you remembered when it was Giorgio. Did you like Giorgio?
Not really, no.
Okay. Well, you might like him better now that he's working with Daft Punk. So.
Yes.
Sorry. I'm just having a night. It's okay. Hey, by the way, Shape Notes.
Yes.
Anyway. So.
Also, if you are so inclined, you can get Chanel No. 5 off of Amazon.
You can.
Yes, and probably many other scents that Kim and Rox have mentioned.
This is true.
Now, of course, if you go to Black Phoenix Alchemy Labs, we would like that too, but you know.
Tell them we said hi.
Oh yeah, tell them
my
yes, tell them.
My favorite is red, and it only comes out at Christmas time. Christmas present ideas!
I think
oh, that's sorry, was that something? Was that a hint? Something?
Yeah, it was to me.
Because
I might get it.
It's called KimWishlist.org. You can find it there, folks. So.
I like to smell like a rose. What can I say?
A rose with thorns.
I'm not... No. Someone talk quick. It's coming. Hurry. Scott, talk. Do something.
The pause that refreshes every 15 minutes on eatcoffee.com.
Oh. Oh God. No, I'm sorry. I was going to make a poison joke and I'm glad someone interrupted me.
That girl is poison.
Sorry.
It's funny. Tuffley and I both went to Pelpiv DeVoe. not every rose has a
story. I just have to giggle every time anybody says Pelpiv DeVoe because it just sounds funny.
It sounds like some weird appetizer.
Yes, like you go to one of those Asian fusion restaurants or something. Yeah. Would you like some crispy Pelpiv DeVoe?
No, I like my DeVoe without the bell and the biv. It's okay.
I like it steamed.
The side of Shalimar.
I love her laugh. It's so amusing.
I tell you what, give me the DeVoe, and then you put Bobby Brown on top of it, and then I can just pretend.
Oh dear.
See, you know what's
what
bad?
Are you on crack?
For years, I was mispronouncing it as Devo, so that was really confusing.
Actually, you know, I don't know if we might want to fly the idea past Mark to cover Doomy. That might.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so today I was editing a document for work, and there is a phrase in some of the legislation that we were referring to in this particular document that talks about, you know, somebody or their bona fide agents, and somebody had put bono fide, like B-O-N-O.
Bono, was it bono fide?
Or bono fide. So, of course, I had to get on IM with my buddy across the aisle and come up with all of the different, like, U2 and Sonny and Cher related jokes that had to do with bono fide agents. It bono made me laugh bono? A whole bono, lot.
Bono, 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 bono. Opa.
Exactly. Bonafide.
Well, it what is it? Bonafide means good faith, right?
Yeah. But
I think in Latin,
legitimate, more or less.
Yeah. It's like bonafide in Latin. If you translated it, I think Din would agree that it meant very self-serving.
See also large glasses.
Yes. See also lemon, pronounced like that. So, anyway, Scott, you donged, right? So that brings us to Rob. Rob, what you got? Do we still have Rob? We may have lost Rob.
It says he's there.
He may have fallen asleep.
Rob, are you
there? Is that better?
Oh, there you are.
Yay!
Have you been trying to talk this entire time?
I was going to say, that was my Guantanamo, so I had to turn the phone off because you were mentioning Belle Viv DeVoe. But it could have been worse. You could have mentioned Color Me Bad, and then Scott would have got aroused.
I don't need
Were help. They the ones? I think they were the ones that we were banned from listening to at my school.
Well, that's good.
I don't think it was for any reasons of taste, though.
I'll change it.
No, they gave you the radio edit.
Because they did the I Want to Sex You Up song.
Oh, yeah, that would have been why.
So,
and I was thinking it was going to be like all dangerous and forbidden, and then when I finally heard it, it was shit. So that was disappointing.
Yeah. So this is my wacky roller coaster of weird fucking picks this week. First, 2012 is out on DVD. It won the BAFTA this week for comedy. It's awesome. David Tennant narrates it, and it's all around a really great comedy. I recommend that. Iceman.
No, okay. Rob, let me pause you. You are talking about not the Roland Emmerich film, because I thought that was
a
comedy.
Series with Hugh Bonneville and
okay.
Coleman.
All right, I'm just making sure, because they're both comedies. I just wanted to make sure we're talking about the right comedy.
No, it's basically about the Olympic planners.
There would have been an intervention.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. So, no, 2012, the BBC series that won the BAFTA this week.
The intentional comedy. Let's put it that way.
If you like Parks and Recreation, you'd dig that.
Yeah. And Hugh Bonneville's great. He just does comedy very well. Anyway, also, I saw the sneak preview of The Iceman this week.
Yeah.
And I have to say, if the Oscars were held today, it's my favorite film of the year.
Wow.
But I'm a sucker for films like Goodfellas. If you like Goodfellas, you're going to like it.
Yeah.
It's based on a true story. The thing that makes it work is that, one, you know, how much more is Michael Shannon going to have to work before everyone realizes that he's a hell of an actor? That's all I'm saying. He's great in it. The other thing that'll freak you out is, I know that when you say Chris Evans, everyone has a certain image that pops into her head, but Chris Evans acts his ass off in this movie. Just for Kim.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, he's really great in it. And the best thing about it is finally Ray Liotta is Ray Liotta again. You know, poor Ray Liotta always does, any movie he does outside of a gangster film just doesn't work, but when he's in the trappings of like a gangster cop thriller kind of genre, he's great. And once again, Ray Liotta is amazing. Plus he's got a great voice. I mean,
sexy eyes too.
If there was anyone we could get to manage the office of Derelict, it would be Ray Liotta, but I don't think that would happen. Just so he could answer the phone. But he's great in it, and I know this is going to frighten and scare everyone, but believe it or not, the Winona Ryder comeback is pretty real.
I'm scared.
Yeah, she's great in it. No, I mean, she's really, really good in it. It's kind of like literally she made the Crazy People movie with Angelina Jolie, mm-hmm. and then literally just picked up from there. This is what her career would be like if she didn't do all the stuff in between that. So she's actually pretty good in it. But the best reason to see it again is Michael Shannon and Chris Evans. They are both just amazing in it. And I'm really happy because I always thought Chris Evans was probably more of a serious actor than what we've seen him in Fantastic Four and Captain America. And this, they let him do a lot. So it's really, and it's well written, and it's just great. So I want to recommend that. Also, a book called The Third Coast, When Chicago Built the American Dream. If you're a fan of sort of like Chicago in terms of architecture, in terms of the history of Prohibition, in terms of just the history of culture, its relation to modernism, and just everything about it, it's a really fascinating book by Tom Dyer.
Is it kind of like that one about the World's Fair and the serial killer? Because that one was really good.
Well, there's no serial killer per se in it, but it's like a panoramic history of Chicago. So, yeah, that's in it. But you get a lot of sort of, you know, when you think about it, you had Mies van der Rohe and Capone and, you know, all these sort of characters running around roughly, you know, within decades of each other. It's a city that's always had these amazing personalities, but it's always sort of taken a back seat to New York. And it's interesting when you read this, you learn a lot more about it as a city than you would think. And it being 4 hours away by car, I'm there a lot, and I still learned a ton about it. It is a city of neighborhoods, too. So you learn a lot of stuff about, for example, Bronzeville, which is like the, at one point, rivaled Harlem in terms of jazz. Cab Calloway came from Bronzeville. And then you get, like, all the fascinating stuff with Frank Lloyd Wright, and all the stuff with Louis Sullivan and Mies van der Rohe, and all the architecture movements going on. And then it's discovered, it really put Chicago as a city that really put Picasso on the map in America as an artist, and also sort of getting European art into shows outside of New York. So there's a lot of really interesting things going on, and that sort of at the same time New York was doing punk, Chicago was developing house and dance music. And So it's an interesting sort of dynamic for the whole city, and it's a really interesting read. And the politics end of it is completely fascinating, too, because, you know, if you like The Untouchables and all that type of stuff, that's all there, too. So I do recommend that. I do have a zine request. I went to see Rocks, Our Power is Far-Reaching. I went to a show in Chicago called Purity Ring, and I had a copy of the zine that I gave to a friend of mine at the girl at their merch table said, oh, do you do a zine? And I said, yeah. And I gave her a copy. She goes, oh, do you have any more? I'll take them back with me to Montreal because that's where she's from. And she does the merch for the band. So I gave her like 10 zines, right? And she asked if we had any in French, which I thought you would find funny. And, but she gave me a zine called Houseplant that I want to mention. It's mostly a, photographic zine, but, it's really well done. Each page is sort of like its own graphic sort of print.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's not a zine for words, but it's pretty incredible in and of itself. So I just wanted to mention that. And also this could be the part that actually scares everyone. I want to recommend, it's available as a digital download and an MP3 and all sorts of things. It's called Music from Sahara's Cell Phones. Rox, have you heard about this?
No.
It is music collected from memory cards of cell phones collected in the Saharan Desert of West Africa.
Oh, wow.
But so basically, that's the only way they have to record music and share music is to record it all on cell phones. So they find all these cell phones in the desert that people lose with bits and pieces of music on it, and it's been constructed into songs.
Do you know, okay, at work, this is funny, when people bring us, you know, their thumb drives and stuff, I always take a tour of their thumb drive. And I acquire so many different stuff. It's like, I'll be, you know, my iPod's got like, I don't know, almost, oh, I don't know, 16,000 tracks on it now. And something will pop up. I just take it. I don't even know what it is. It's like, I don't know where this Petula Clark singing downtown in German came from.
reminds me of when I was in college and everybody in the dorm would put all of their music folders on the like shared drive and people would just go take random stuff. Anything I have in my library that I have absolutely no idea where it came from, I finally just kind of shrug and go, must be ResNet.
But along those same lines, too, I want to recommend Thai Beat Agogo. Now, there's a couple volumes, but I'm only on volume one. It is a collection of Thai pop music from the 1960s, including a cover of the James Bond theme, and just some just bizarrely strange, awesome sort of pop and garage stuff. And people don't realize that in the 60s, Southeast Asia was a gold mine for just really creative and amazing pop records because they could pretty much do whatever they wanted. And there was tons of money being thrown into recreating American beach records and garage records. So thus you have copies of like people recording Beach Boys songs in like Malaysian and things, but they're awesome. So if you ever happen across any of that, check it out and it's great. Which brings me to Saigon Rock and Roll, Vietnamese classic tracks from 1960 to 1974. It's all these pop records that were made sort of before Vietnam kind of really got messy. And sadly, when the regime came in, they started trashing and destroying all the tapes for these records. So this is like, in many ways, the only sort of stuff that survives from like popular culture, westernized popular culture that seeped into Vietnam in the 60s and 70s, because they pretty much echoed the British swinging 60s in fashion, but they adopted a lot of the French stuff in pop, and they fused it with the sort of traditional drums and reed sounds of Vietnam, and they made it into a pop record, these are pop records, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, so I do want to recommend that. And then coming back to Planet Earth, Tuffy talked about it earlier, the new record from The National, Trouble Will Find Me. It's pretty dark, it's pretty dreary, but it's really, really great. And this is the record that's going to put them pretty much on the map. And they're going to succeed commercially in all the ways that Radiohead didn't in terms of being a dreary, dark sort of pop band. And that's because I think their melodies are a little bit more relatable. So, yeah. I'm going to recommend that. And my last thing is Doctor Who The Visitation, out on DVD now. One of the underappreciated Peter Davison stories of the Fifth Doctor. And you should probably check it out. So there you go.
You know, I was thinking The Visitation should have been the Fifth Doc story they go with Revisited.
I thought they should have too, especially because Richard Mace was such an interesting character who almost... They almost wrote out Adric and brought in Richard Mace as the companion, but it didn't work out. And it would have been interesting to sort of have a doctor, a companion from that era of English history as a companion.
But, I just thought the reason I would think that over the one they're going to show, which is Earthshock, is that actually all of the companions have something equally to do. That actually adds to the plot, which when they had the three companions in the Peter Davison era was really apparently hard for them to do.
Yeah. And it truly is, when you say Doctor Who with rubber monsters, it's Doctor Who with rubber monsters. I mean, you really get the Terrellectals were like really awful looking monsters, but they were still really scary. They managed to be pretty, as scary as you could be. You know, in 1981 on a BBC budget for Doctor Who. But I have a soft spot for this one because it's one of the first Davison stories I saw. And it's, I think, the first one where Davison sort of is really coming into his own as a character. It's a kid that he's kind of still finding his turf. And this is the first one where I think he's really content and settling into the role.
And this is the re-release of the DVD, correct?
This is a special edition, yeah. And they go back to the location where they filmed it with Mark Strickson, and he kind of walks around the set, and they talk about filming the episode. And
do you know if the original commentary track from the older release is there, where basically the four of them are basically MSTing the entire episode?
Yes.
That is brilliant. If you get a chance, watch The Visitation with the commentary track. It's hilarious.
It's also one of the few commentary tracks where they have Matthew Waterhouse on it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. And you feel kind of bad for him when you listen to it because he really was the odd man out. And, you know, whatever problems he had, he was a kid at that point. He got brought into the show sort of in weird sort of ways. And, he was kind of feel bad for him. And you see his character sort of in a different light. It's also the few stories where Adric is sort of like not annoying. So.
Yeah, and like I said, the Visitation is like one of the very few where not only do all three of those companions are given something that actually does something to the plot, but yeah. but they're all utilized really well.
Yeah, and the direction on it's really good too. The guest star, it's a perfect sort of classic TV episode where you have a really nice symbiosis of good writing, a strong cast with stuff to do. And a story that sort of makes sense. A historical story with aliens that makes sense. That was the first time Doctor Who went back into a historical period in a very long time, when they made it. And it really works. So, it's really underappreciated. So you should check it out.
All right. Dang. Cool. Thanks, Rob. Sorry. All right, John, what you got?
War? And me my recommendations have something in common.
Good God.
Good for absolutely nothing. I have nothing.
Say it again. What?
Say it again.
I was saying that I have nothing.
Good God, John.
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again.
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, it hurts.
Except by all those fine recommendations, from some place, you know, just find some place on the internet to go and buy them. Don't bother going anywhere specific unless Widge has some place you'd rather.
Oh, sure.
Oh, you have some place?
No, I do have some place. I
really?
Would say go to neatcoffee.com/Amazon.
How long have you been doing that?
How long have I been doing it? I've been doing it since time immemorial, and so should all of you. Dear listeners. Yeah, Rob.
What is it good for?
Absolutely everything.
Absolutely. Give it a kickbacks and say it again. Yeah. So yes, if you go to neatcoffee.com/Amazon or use the search, bit for Amazon on the site, on the right hand side of the site, pretty much every page of the site, for stuff that you were going to buy anyway. Even if it's not the stuff that we've recommended, we get kickbacks for it, and it helps to pay for stuff like the server, which we're about to have to upgrade. So anyway, yes, I recommend that. And my own recommendation is that Cloud Atlas is out this week on Blu-ray, and it is large and full of stuff and quite fascinating. Because
I hear it has a lot of things in it.
Yes, it does. It has everything in it, which is both its strong point and its weak point all in one. But it is an absolutely fascinating film. Yeah. And you get to see... What's that?
Hugo Weaving and Greg.
I can't understand what you're saying.
Hugo Weaving.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you get to see Hugo Weaving and Drag. You get to see Tom Hanks as a thug. You get to see Hugh Grant as a cannibal chief. All kinds of things that you never thought you would see. So it's, I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was fun. So yeah, it is out. Sadly, it only has some featurettes on it and no big ass commentary. But you know.
Did they have room?
That's a good question.
They couldn't fit it on the disc.
Yeah. and if it had done better box office wise, they probably would have made room. But alas, no, because nobody here understood what the hell it was on about. It will do very well in home video, I think. So that is my recommendation. Please check it out. They could use the money.
Although so, I love the...
What's this? Yes, definitely.
Although I love the bit that Brooker did on Weekly Wipe where he's basically interviewing his past, present, and future selves.
Yes, that is my favorite review of Cloud Atlas ever. So yeah, if you look up Weekly Wipe, Cloud Atlas, I'm sure you'll find it. Somebody's got to have posted it on YouTube. It's quite brilliant. So anyway, yes, there's a lot going on there. So on that particular bombshell, I think we've reached the end of another Weekend Justice, where I think we look back on the littered remains of the past 3 hours, and just like every time we join up here in the Hall of Weekend Justice, I think we should stare at each other ruefully and say those magic words, crispy Belbiv DuVeau.
I prefer steamed.
With duck sauce.
Ruefully?
It was the first word that came to mind.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know what? I was thinking of food because I was thinking of roux. That's what it was.
Roux, no, like, gravy, like butter and flour to make a gravy?
No, I'm sorry. I was thinking of A.A. Milne, so that's why I was thinking of roux.
Oh, that
roux. Oh.
Yep. Yep.
How to make a roux.
No, that,
it's
oh,
very
now
important that the flour cooks properly. Otherwise,
this
you just
is correct.
Flour.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Since you used that creepy accent, Roxy, you reminded me. I was actually thinking of an orangutan with a straight razor. So I was thinking of Rue as in Rue Morgue. Is what it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
No, you were thinking of Paris. You know, like that's the name of all the streets.
Kind of like Rue Morgue, then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, because
that's French for road. I took French in high school. I remember.
You know, it's amazing that people learn more in like the last 2 minutes of this show when we have no idea what we're saying than
the
they do
we
in the previous
2.5 hours.
Well,
tough,
you know, why haven't you applied for like a Department of Education grant for all the teaching we do?
I
for
think
like
we're
the last 2 minutes
the same
of every podcast.
Well, that's how we get the grant. That's what the last 2 minutes are for. That's kind of like where Jock and everybody in the writing room went, oh shit, we need to put something educational in there. I know. Let's have a discussion of the word roux.
Oh, so this is the, you know, knowing is half the battle thing attacked onto the end of the G.I. Joe episode.
Yes, exactly.
If ever the power lines fall down on the road, don't touch them.
And if ever Deep Six comes up from underneath you while you're swimming, feel creeped
don't
out, because I would.
Yeah. Feel real creeped out about that.
Don't offer to touch his Deep Star Six.
And realize that Snow Job is not his
full name.
Thinking
about shore leave, and that's just kind of bad.
Well, Kim.
And
Kim,
what the deal was with the parrot?
No, Kim, think about the Tom Waits song instead. You'll be fine.
Now, you use a roux to make a bechamel sauce, right?
Yes, you do.
There you go.
And as long as you take enough time that the flour actually toasts,
that's
you
right.
get a lovely nutty undertone to the bechamel.
Yeah, now I'm hungry.
Now, I will say this. I'm really looking forward to seeing him in This Is the End. No, that's Baruchel. Sorry. I'm sorry. I was confused.
I was really confused just then.
Just then? Just then? Really, just then?
Well, most recently, just then.
Okay, I was about to say.
Give me just a minute while I clarify.
Hi there. Many of you know me as the half-assed engineer John on Need Coffee's Weekend Justice podcast. But what most of you don't know is that before I was internationally known by tens of people, I was a patient at the Sleep Deprivation Institute, known as NeedCoffee.com. NeedCoffee.com has provided me and many of you with hundreds of hours of therapy through engaging rants, dreamcasts, reviews, contests, news of the offbeat and cool, and of course, more information about caffeine than was really necessary. Why, without Need Coffee, I might have actually seen Starship Troopers 4 bugging out. Thank you, Need Coffee, for saving me from that fate. Now, all this goodness does come at a cost, so the fine folks at Need Coffee are asking for your help. Please head over to needcoffee.com/memberships to learn what you can do to keep this invaluable resource alive. Your contribution not only will allow for more great content and more chances to win free shit, but it might just save a kitten. So as you sit there, listening to this podcast, this free podcast, sipping on your $8 Café de Frou-Frou, think about what you could have done with that money instead. Sure, you could have donated to some worthy cause, or you could keep Need Coffee and kittens alive. Your choice. Visit needcoffee.com/memberships for more details. Oh, crap. Did I record that?
And here's Dakota.
are no French baseball players.